Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We'll routine to call a scene, to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table, our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off so mad in Camelot, we sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Hey, King Shaziz the Turbo! All rise for King Shaziz the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!
Away, 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 away
nothing happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello everybody, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table with old King Shaziz the Terrible, who rules with an iron fist, and don't you forget it, mister and missus. Anyway, yeah, that last song there, Country Boy Can Survive, there's a whole lot was said in that song. I don't know if you guys really paid attention to the lyrics in that song, but there was a lot that was said in that song. And, of course, you know, when it talks about, when it first comes on, they're talking about the preacher man says it's the end of time. You know, I think about modern day society, how, you know, every day is a doomsday out here in cyber world, and there's all kinds of things going on around the world. There's wars and rumors of wars and plagues and pestilence and famines and zombie apocalypses and all this kind of stuff. After a while, the average Joe, after hearing all this stuff, becomes kind of battle-weary. I know I get kind of battle-weary, especially when I woke up this morning and I was like 30 minutes before my show and not even prepared. Didn't even have my coffee and my face is hurting and I got all these problems going on and Murphy's Law is kicking in and all that kind of stuff. Heck, I couldn't even get my chair adjusted right. So with that said, you know, I managed to make it here. We got the thing up and running, and I'm hoping that I'm going to have a whole lot more people talking than me because I can shut my face for a while, and, you know, it's kind of hard to get old King Shaziz to shut up because he's always rambling. But anyway, and like I said, in today's society, with all the things going on in the world, people can become battle-weary of all the things, you know, it's just an overwhelming chaos. You know, idiocy going on out there, stupidity. But here around the table, when we sit there, we can talk about all these solutions and we can figure out ways by which we can make this world a better place. Now, wouldn't it be nice if we could just, like, get everybody around the table all over the world, you know, all these people that disagree with one another, and they could put down their weapons and their stupidity and their disagreements for a day or two, and we can all sit around and work things out. And then at the end of the day, if we can't work anything out, then we throw on, I think the band name is Drowning Pool or something like that, Puddle of Mud or something like that, I can't remember. One of the new bands is talking about let the bodies hit the floor and then everybody just go to Knuckle Junction and whoever's left standing is the new king of the globe, you know. Is that what it's going to come down to? I'm just saying, man. How many years has it been? You know, we go all the way back to Y2K. There was some stuff going on during that time. You know, the computers were going to crash. The planet was going to get hit by Planet X or Comet Elenin or all these different things, pole shifts. Maybe these things will happen. But I think about all the time that people waste spending their lives trying to get prepared for doomsday scenarios and all that kind of stuff.
Or hunkering down in their prepped space while they, you know, wait for it to happen instead of making connections with people and make the best out of life.
Yeah, point exactly. You know, so here we are. It's 2014. As far as I'm concerned, we got a really lousy usurper in chief, and you know, our politics. We can all talk about that. The fact that it's just a left-right paradigm. It's all pretty much a joke. We can talk about all the conspiracy theories under the sun. But I'd like to figure out a way that we can all get to talking about. Okay, we know it's jacked up. What are we going to do to fix it? You know. Here at the Knights of the Round Table and the Mad Science Show, we got ideas, and we're putting these ideas together. We're actually trying to, you know, do the networking necessary to make this world a better place. So for those folks out there who are battle-weary and tired of the doggone doomsday scenarios every 5 seconds, because when one's over, you know, it's kind of like, imagine being in a race. And you take off running, and it's a mile race, you know, and you get to running, you're almost at the end of that mile, and you're like, okay, yeah, I can see the finish line, and bam, they move the finish line. Now you got another mile to run, all right? Mm-hmm. And the date just changed from 2000 to 2004 and 2006, and the closer you get to doomsday, you know, and you're still prepping, you got all your stuff. Spend a lot of money, you wasted a lot of time with your family and your friends and your children and all this kind of stuff, and you're still prepping. You know, it's good to be prepared, but at some point, you know, you got to weigh out your priorities, man. You know, doomsday.
Right. Maybe. Hey, you know what? The worst problem is for preppers that I've noticed? They actually make all kinds of excuses for what they're doing, and you know, use just, you know, little sidelines for like benefits of what they're doing, and it's like none of this is really helping your family though. Like, oh, I save money because I'm buying in bulk and we rotate the stock out anyway, so you know, all that food that we buy to prepare for the end, yeah, it's actually saving us money. You know, it's like,
well, there's some portion
that's still not explaining that whenever you need something for your kids to learn about, you know, something or other while they're either going to school or being homeschooled or whatever, and you don't have the money because you spent it all on food that, you know, you didn't really need and you're not going to need for months. And no matter how much you say you rotate the stock out, you know full well some of that stuff's going to go bad because you're just never going to get to it.
Well, I know that we stockpiled a few things that needed to be had just for such an emergency. We're going to be all right. I'm not stressing over anything, but you know,
right,
as
but
time
comes. Do you stockpile
comes,
every? Do you think about it every day? Do you
no,
your
no.
Way, you know, at least make us see. These are people that do that, and they justify doing that because they think that they're saving money or they're doing this or doing that. You know, that there's some benefit right now out of it, as well as, you know, they're, you know, worried about there being an end. I mean, they're basically doing what those people did that were, you know, they went through a war, and they, you know how it is during war where you can't get anything. Like, you can't get rubber gloves, or you can't, I mean, just weird things, matches and stuff like that. And so they order, like, a ton of this stuff, and it gets back ordered, and then it all shows up at their door after the war is over, and they're like, oh, I don't need it now.
Well, the point I was trying to get to is, you know, every time they move the date of doomsday, you know, down the road a little bit. Well, by the time doomsday gets here, I've already had to deplete my, you know, because Murphy's Law comes in, you know. You run short on, maybe your light bill's a little higher this month, so you got to pay a little extra for light, so you buy a little less groceries, and you just feed off your supply. And so,
yep.
By the time you get there, you ain't prepared anyway. And there's no way you can prepare 100% for every disaster, but the biggest concern about the whole deal, if you watch out here on the internet and you listen to people, I mean, they just flat out cuss each other out up and down the storm. They're fighting back and forth, arguing over who's right, who's wrong, and all this kind of stuff. Who killed this guy? Who killed that guy? Did we or didn't we go to the moon? Is there or isn't there a God? Do you know that there's so much time wasted that could be going towards making this world a better place? I mean, you said it a few times, Thomas. Look at all the technology we have access to. We could be doing so much, man. The research, and I'm fascinated every time I listen to you talk. Sometimes you come across things that I never even heard of before, and I'm like, that's why I think I asked you that question yesterday. I said, is there anything you haven't studied? And you said, yeah, there's a few things I ain't studied, but either way, it's
hey, hold on. Let me go back to that question, okay? Because that's kind of important. if there's something that I haven't studied, there's a very good chance that, I mean, there's some stuff I know that I'd like to know more about, but I haven't gotten a chance to get to, but I know full well, and everyone should know this, there's plenty of stuff that you probably will want to know, but you have no idea it's out there.
Yeah, there you go.
You never think you're so far up the mountain that you can see the entire world, because remember, the world is a sphere, and the side is always hidden from you, you know?
Yep.
So you don't know what's over there. You have no idea what's over there.
Well, that's why...
And don't let it scare you. That should be exciting, man.
That's why I keep calling us all... For. That's why I keep calling us all the Dream Team, because we're on opposite sides of the world to each other. You know, we got Mitko over in Bulgaria, and then we got Cultus over in Australia, and... I heard,
this is the thing, though. We're not just, like, physically on other sides of the world. We're also, like, scientifically and metaphorically on other sides
of
the
world. Yeah, that's what I was trying to get to.
We're all coming at this from different angles.
Exactly. It's a sheer case of where, and I love this saying, where one fails, the other prevails. When we put our heads together, there is literally nothing we can't solve together.
Yeah, my strengths are your weaknesses and vice versa.
I don't think it's going to be a matter of us failing, though, dude. I think we're all going to be succeeding. Maybe at slightly different times.
Not failing as such, but more so we're like I've got no idea about what radioactive substance I want to use. I might go to Mitko, you know,
right.
Or I want to know how to do something specific with metalcraft or something. Like, I'm going to come to you, or you know, I want to work something out with coils. I'm going over to Larry, you know. So one of us has a shortfall.
We can help each other like this, not just in words, but we can help each other physically too. If you really need something done and you're having trouble getting something made that's metal, you know full well you can get a hold of me and I can just pack it up, ship it off to you, you know?
Well, I need...
It'd be so much trying to go to some metal manufacturing facility down the road that's going to want $50 an hour or God knows how much, you know?
I need
and then,
my...
You know, five times of materials and... expenses, and I mean, it's ridiculous, you know, a couple $1,000 when you can, I can probably whip it up for nothing, and then just, you know, $50 we ship it over to you, you know.
I need my $1,500 pop boat coil.
We talked about this, but you've never contacted me outside of the show to discuss what to do about that.
I sent you pictures.
That's not enough. There wasn't enough details in it, dude.
Oh. Okay.
We need a little more information on that before I put tools on the wheel and start parts. I got to know exactly what I'm making, because once I've made something, it's next to impossible to go back in. If it's really close and it's not enough, it'll all be off. I can't true the equipment back up again, so it's got to be done the first time.
Well,
or at least be close enough that you can get by on whatever I put out for you.
the picture is right there in the general vicinity. You could either give or take it an inch or even 2 inches. Just the biggest portion is the diameter of the tubing, either being at the very least an inch to 2 inches. You know,
mm-hmm.
And
who's going to do the tubing part of it? Like, who's going to pick the tubing up for it?
That's a good question.
So I know how far I'll have to ship the tool. Because, I mean, once a tool's made, I can send it to whoever's going to buy the tubing, and they can make it there on the spot. They can make the coil there.
Cool. Anyway.
Sometimes it'll be adjustable.
Put someone's hand up, Shaziz, and we'll get it going.
I don't know, man. I see Shaziz's hand up right now.
That's what I'm speaking.
Yeah.
He's got two fingers up, man.
I've got a tubing bender, but I don't know if it's going to be what I need, so I don't know. Anyway,
this will bend the tubing, and it'll also, you know, give you the opportunity to, like, if you really need me to make it so that it can bring you down a little bit from a slightly bigger size, you'll be able to do that.
Yeah.
So it'll compress the tube and make it a tinier tube a little bit.
All right, back to the show, because you guys made some really brilliant points about mostly like networking and the reasons why we got an awesome opportunity here. And I don't want to lose track of that, because, you know, when I talk about being battle-weary, we've all been battle-weary. I mean, we get to the point where...
Back to the crossroads. Don't get too far down that path.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, you know what? The easiest way, I think, to deal with that battle-weary thing is just stop listening to what other people are saying and taking it as some sort of, you know, they know more than me. I mean, screw that. How many times have these people been wrong? You know,
well, I think
I can tell you right now. If you're out there listening to us, and you are worried about the end of the world, it's mostly, I mean, most of the promise I've seen is in the economic collapse. And the worst time for an economic collapse is always going to happen during times whenever prices are the highest. So, you know, just watch your gas prices and be more ready then. Relax whenever the gas prices go down and, you know, spend some time with your family, man. Connect with those people, your friends and whatnot, you know. Stop worrying so much about collecting and, you know, and all that other stuff. And don't hoard, you know, resources as much as you hoard knowledge. You can store knowledge as heavy as you want.
Cause
never run out of room.
In all reality, you can do a lot more with skills and knowledge in a crisis like that than you can having materials on hand, because you can make shift, you can make do. But if you've got materials and no skills, what are you going to do?
Right, exactly.
Well,
it's that old adage, you know, why couldn't they, you know, fix the ship? They didn't have the parts. Oh, man, it always comes down to the parts. Well, sure. If you have knowledge, then you will never be out of parts, because you'll always be able to do something to get by, you know.
Yep, shave down a few palm trees, mate. You'll be all right.
Well, in my faith background, it talks about blessed be the peacemakers, man. I'm that guy that wants to go up there and just kind of, you know, break up the fight before it ever even starts. When you start to see somebody's getting all out of hand, you know, and all that kind of stuff, so... My portion of becoming battle weary is whenever I look out into the world, and you know, I always got to have the scales of justice kind of leveled out there, and I get to the point where I'm trying to shout out to the world, you know, can't we all just get along, peace and love, and all this kind of stuff. And then while I'm over here shouting to the north, then somebody's over there starting to fight over there on the left, over there to the south, you know. And then whenever I spin around to holler at the south, you know, hey, chill out, man. You know, north, somebody...
The north will pick it up again and start running with it, won't they?
Yeah, and so it's like, finally you get to the point...
That's why you need to stop talking to the people who are already grown up and set in their ways and start trying to basically reach out to get these people to raise their kids to be more peaceful, you know?
Well, and I agree with that,
too. They'll take over and create a peaceful world in the place. You know, basically, they'll just supplant what we have now, because what we have isn't working. It's quite obvious.
Oh, it's blatantly obvious. I mean, but what I'm trying to say is that, you know, my whole deal is... I want the world to be a better place. I want to be able to do something to save the world. And by myself, I'm worthless, you know. You know, not worthless to me as my family. That's not what I'm saying. But, I mean, I can't... One person can't save the world. But this movement that we're working towards, we're like I said, we're talking to people in Australia, to Ireland, Scotland, and Canada, and all over the United States, and Bulgaria, and Russia, and all the different points of the globe, and we've actually got like-minded individuals on the other side of the planet. And so if we can keep this positive ripple flowing, you know, eventually we can work towards where we can get our people to start raising their children to be peacemakers instead of warriors and so on down the line. It's just such a... You know, that's what I got to give the credit. I got to give credit to the secret societies of the world, the Illuminatis and the Freemason groups or whatever. I got to give them credit, because if one thing they don't have, they have patience, because it's been so long since all this stuff, this conspiracy stuff started. But here, you know, it's not done yet. The one world government ain't here yet. It's not here, whether it's on the way or whether it's not. These guys must have patience of epic proportions. Because, you know,
yeah,
you're going
to
do...
I don't think there's any conspiracy to create a one-world government on the scale that these people are thinking. I think the only reason there's anybody out there thinking about trying to create such a thing is because people got worried about somebody doing it and started talking about it and gave them the idea.
Well,
they already have a world control. Through the monetary system.
Yeah, you know? They already got that, but I'm just saying they must have a lot of patience, because, you know, trying to mop up the mess created by all these international bankers out there who are basically worried about fattening up their wallet as opposed to helping humanity, you know. And it happens on corporate scales, it happens on small company scales, it happens from the top of the government all the way down to the smallest portions of the government. That, you know, people are going to do whatever's going to benefit them. I've seen this many times, you know, and people will lie to preserve their own job. If they've done something wrong, they're not going to come out and say, oh, you know, I made a mistake, let me remedy it, or something like that, you know.
Well, and they think, and they get away with doing it because they'll slip out of office and they don't find out about it until they're out of office. And, I mean, there's a nasty row going on right now, and it has been going on for years now, that I just became aware of, where basically the government, the local governments are going in and just seizing people's, they set a criteria, right, that is kind of unrealistic, and anytime somebody's safety deposit box hits that falls into that criteria, they go in and seize it and auction the stuff off.
Man.
And their criteria is basically you haven't contacted the bank or gone in and opened your safety deposit box that you can prove within like a certain amount of time. You could still be paying on it. There are people that are having their safety deposit box seized that have even, they bank at the bank. So they're in there on a regular basis cashing checks and, you know, depositing checks and having money sent there and paying bills with their account there. And they just keep paying like they regularly do to pay for their safety deposit box. And the whole point of having one is that you've got peace of mind. It can be there for 15, 20, 30 years. And when you go back, the bank will keep that stuff safe for you. And they get there, and, you know, they're open their safety deposit box, and it's empty. There's nothing in it. It's been drilled out, and all the stuff's been taken out. You know, and at first it was like 15 years. If you haven't been in and touched your safety deposit box in 15 years, and they can come and claim it as abandoned property, right? Then it was 7 years. Now it's 3 years, and they're pushing for 1 year.
Man.
We literally had a guy. That's hard, man. Yeah, he's been maintaining a safety deposit box for years and years and years from the UK. He was planning on coming to the US to retire, right? Had $4 million worth of bonds in there. He gets over here, there's nothing. They took them out, auctioned them off for $200,000, and then just put it in the government fund and spent it.
Man. See, that's as bad as eminent domain, man. They're going to steal people's stuff.
Yeah, if you want the numbers, okay, California itself has admitted $5.1 billion worth of stuff. Just California.
Ugh. And
they're the first ones to come forward and say, okay, we're going to go ahead and actually make an effort to find the people that we have these abandoned deals before we go, you know, spending their money.
Then they wonder why that the people back in the Depression used to hide their money in the freaking mattress instead of the bank.
Oh, dude, there was a chick that basically said that she had, like, you know, natural pearls and all this, you know, stuff, documents and whatnot from her grandparents that, you know, they had taken. And she was like, you know, I put it in there because I figured it'd be safer than putting it in a mattress. But obviously, I was wrong.
Man. Well, see, so there you go. This is what I'm talking about. In every single direction, there is something going on. You gotta, it's like, you remember Thomas Jefferson hold on a second. Thomas Jefferson said the price to freedom is eternal vigilance. And so the price to keeping anything that you give a rat's, you know what, about, if you got it in a safe deposit box now, is eternal vigilance. If I got a safe deposit box, it's going to be sitting in my room in a fire safe, you know. And I'm going to be sitting on top of that.
That's the ticket. That's the ticket. If no one knows you have something, too, they're not going to come looking for it to steal it.
Man.
Don't brag about it. You know, just keep that stuff tucked away for a rainy day, you know?
Mm. Well, I'm gonna hide Cultus's Van de Graaff generator until he gets back here so nobody steals it.
I hide it where I can find it real easy, would you?
Yeah. All right, Larry. Hey, Larry.
Larry can borrow it.
Larry, whenever Cultus ain't looking, I'll give you that little nudge and point over there, you know?
That's it. I want live stream from your lab.
Oh, see, you know, that's pretty bad, you know.
None of this 480p either. I want 1080p.
Yeah.
High def.
High definition. Right there, right in plain view. I want to be able to see every single square inch of that thing. Oh, man. But don't that just say a lot about that? Go all the way back to that song that I talked about, the Country Boy Can Survive song. You know, there is so much said in that one song that it's just mind blowing. You know, but he's pretty much talking about, you know, at the end of the day, a country boy is going to be fine. You know, he's got all the hunting and farming skills that he needs to get by. You know, and all that kind of stuff. The average Joe out there, on the other hand, man. I'll tell you what, I my biggest fear about any kind of apocalypse happening, you know, any kind of power grid going down, hasn't been the fact I can do without the lights, because I know how to make a candle. But what I can't deal with is people getting so desperate that they're willing to come up in the middle of the night and bash me in the head and steal whatever it is that I do have, you know, or hurt my family, right. You know. So it's
that's why a lot of preppers try to push for the whole neighborhood to get into prepping, so they don't have to worry about those people knocking on the door. And then the next step is, well, what about, you know, roving bands that basically they came from the city or whatever? Well, we got to get ready for them so that if they come, we can, you know, defend ourselves. We'll work together to defend ourselves.
Well, in the doomsday,
it's going to turn into a feudalistic nightmare.
In the doomsday prepper show, they had a brief show on. I don't know if you all caught it, but there was a brief show on there about a group of people who said that they're not going to prep. They're just going to wait until something happens and then go around and take whatever they want. And so this show is only a couple episodes that I know of that basically these guys were building themselves cars that had all kinds of cool things to it, road warrior style cars, you know, and they said that whenever something
stuff
happens,
that's fun in a movie but not in real life.
Yeah. When something happens, that they weren't worried about prepping because they'd just go around and take what they need, you know. But there's that mentality out there. You see what I'm saying?
I was gonna say I'm almost there, but I'm not at the stage where I would take something somebody else is trying to hold on to. I'm not worried about prepping because I know how to salvage and recycle. I'll go take the stuff that nobody cares about and turn it into something valuable.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Collecting knowledge, because then you can do with what no one else wants.
That would be my mindset. What you just said right there, that during the apocalypse, I'd be the guy running around there salvaging it out of the dump and leftovers and stuff like that, because. In my faith, you know, it says that, a man who would try to save his life would surely lose his life. And I can't remember which portion of the book it's in there, but it is in there. It talks about if you're trying to save yourself, you're going to lose yourself either way. But there's a lot to be said about that, and the fact that I'm not into harming anybody anyway. And so, you know, if there's something going on, I'm not going to go out and steal it, even if I need it. If I need bread from somebody, if I can't barter with them, then I'll go out and figure out a way to pick some berries or whatever's left over, you know, and just do the best I can with a bad situation. So I'm not worried about no problem.
There's always something people overlook, too, as an edible substance.
Yeah.
So if you see people picking things over, I mean, I know enough about that. I did a little bit of studying on that. I'll actually avoid the stuff that I see everybody picking over, even if there's any left, because I don't want to completely run it completely out. So I'll go look for the stuff that I know nobody else has figured out and go, you know, rummage through that, those plants and whatnot, you know?
Well, you know, if things ever were to get that bad, I would love to have all the Knights of the Round Table over here on my property, you know, because together, there ain't nothing we couldn't figure out. You know, we would literally survive the apocalypse because we'd figure out ways by which to, you know, keep intruders off and, you know, and still be able to help out people from the outside. But, you know, we'd still be able to maintain because of the combined research and study that we've all done together. And that's the key. The key to any of this stuff that we've been talking about is knowledge. Now, it's blatantly obvious if Planet X hits the planet Earth, then, you know, we're through anyway. So don't even stress over Planet X, because that's not something you can do anything about, you know. But man-made disasters or whatever, you know, to some extent, you can't do nothing about that. They're either going to happen or they're not going to happen. But to waste your time and your life, and life is short for the average Joe these days. Back in the biblical days, they lived 500 to 900 years old back in them days. They must have been eating healthy is all I can say. Nowadays, you got 65 to maybe 80 and possibly 100 if you're lucky years to live. And I'm 48 years old right now, and so if I'm halfway through the whole deal or even further along, you know, I want to make the best out of the rest of what I got to try to benefit my kids and their kids. You know, I want to leave something behind. But if I'm sitting here stressing every single day, becoming battle weary of the doomsday that is to come, then I'm not doing anybody any good besides making myself miserable. I'm making everyone else around me miserable as well. I'm like when I was telling my wife one time, I went down to my aunt's house one time. I was so incredibly depressed that it was just beyond all belief. And so I go down there to sit with my family and have some coffee and some comfort to be with my family. And so I'm sitting there at the table, and they offer me a cup of coffee, and I got me a cup of coffee, and I'm sitting there, and I'm drinking my coffee, and I'm listening to everybody talk. And this one's talking about, well, this one over here's got cancer, and this one here's dying of this, and that one's dying of that, and, you know, my arthritis and bursitis and tendonitis and gingivitis and every kind of itis is acting up, and then all this stuff is going on. And then in comes my cousin and his wife, and they're just yelling at the top of their lungs at each other, you know, fighting and fussing and feuding, and I'm listening to them, and they're starting to, you know, talk about, well, this guy did this and this guy did that and all this kind of stuff. And the more I listen to my family talk, and keep in mind there's probably about 11 or 12 people around this table and in this room that were, you know, all just continuously cancer, or, you know, liver problems or kidney problems, or can't get the medication, and the president did this, and the government sucks, and all this kind of stuff. And I keep slowly, gradually sinking down into my seat, you know, deeper and deeper, and I'm sitting there, and finally, you know, I took my last drink of coffee, and I set my cup down on the table, and I stood up, and I said, you know what? I says, I'm getting the bleep up out of here. And I said it loud, too. And I mean, the whole room just went totally quiet. And they're like, man, what's wrong with you? And I said, look, I came over here. I was so depressed that I couldn't even see straight. And so after listening to all you guys and all the stuff that you guys are talking about, I ain't got it so bad. I'm going on back home because I can't stand to be around all this negativity. I said, I was depressed, but now I feel good because ain't nothing I got wrong with me compared with all that stuff you guys just got through rambling on about.
That's it, and sometimes you just got to eradicate that negativity. Like, it physically affects you.
Oh, it does.
You know, I mean, just to have someone around you that causes negativity sort of just, I don't know, it changes your whole, changes the way you concentrate, changes the way you work, it changes the way you think, the way you feel, it just really disturbs you, doesn't it?
Oh man, it does, it's a physical sickness. Whenever you sit around somebody who's continuously negative, and the internet can do that to you, man. You get on there, and if you go seeking out problems in the world, by God, you're going to find problems in the world. You're going to find more problems that you want. If you go out and you seek out positivity in the world, you can find it. It's there. You know, we found it here at the Knights of the Round Table, and, you know,
exactly.
And all these networks that we're rebroadcasting on, you know, these are people who see that there is a hope for positivity, and they're actually doing something. And when I say doing something, it could be as simple as doing a radio show, you know. That's a positive move forward, even if you're just talking about it, you know. You see what I'm saying?
Yep, this is my right. This is my once a week correction to my solidarity and positivity. When I get together with you boys and girls, and we sit around and we talk, and you just, I know, man, we all get along so well, and you know that even if one of us was to screw up, you know, we're all still around, we're going to love each other no matter what, you know. Like, it's, we're a family here.
Well, I got this. I got this phrase, and I agree with you. I got this phrase: if you do something, then something gets done. But if you do nothing, nothing gets done. You see, does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Hey.
Absolutely nothing gets done when you're not doing nothing. You know, if you set out to do nothing, you will accomplish nothing.
Exactly.
And so, at least,
say what is that that little phrase? What do you want as a reward? Nothing.
Yeah.
Well, then you shall have it in great abundance.
Yeah, a massive amount of nothing. And for those who seek power in the world, you know, when the world's all destroyed, you're going to be like a Metallica song. You're going to be King Nothing, you know. I'm going to be King Shaziz the Terrible over my huge empire of nothing, you know. I'm going to be around a bunch of rubble and smoke and trash, which in one sense is good because there's a whole lot to be recycled in all that trash because I studied beforehand, but I'll have the nicest junk pile in the apocalypse. What do you think?
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be dusted off, too, with one of those little Swiffer things that I'll find in the trash. Hey, I thought we had one of the dames on here, man.
No.
She disappeared?
Not tonight. Long story. Doesn't matter. Moving along.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I know we got Mitko, and he's in the background.
We do. We have tonight we have Mitko, we have Larry, we have Tom Sharp, who has some midget family members running around making a bit of noise in the background, so he's got himself muted. Thomas, Mitko, and yourself, and myself.
Whee! Well, does any of them other guys have anything to contribute to this pile that we just put out onto the world?
I nominate Larry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Self-defense also runs in that batch. When the end comes, we're going to have to be willing to defend ourselves.
Yeah.
No matter what that takes, defend ourselves and our families. So
the best way to defend yourself is to not be anywhere where someone can get to you, you know. Don't let them know what you're doing and what you're up to. The tiger can't do any damage to the air. You know, it has nothing to insert its claws into.
Just remember that a cave becomes a grave.
Yeah. And that's another thing. Back when it was looking at Osama bin Laden, I called the radio station up and I said, look, I can tell you exactly how to get Osama bin Laden out that cave. And they're like, how's that? I said, throw in one of my cousin Charlie's boots. He'll come running up out of there. I guarantee you that.
Biological warfare, isn't that against the Geneva Convention?
It may be, but, you know, my cousin Charlie came over one time and he'd been out on a stroll and he said, hey, man, you mind if I take my boots off? And I said, go ahead, make yourself at home, brother. He pulls his boots off, and my God, man, I thought the paint was coming off the walls. I could feel the enamel on my teeth running down the back of my throat, and I'm like, dude, you got to put those back on, you know? If you want to get somebody out the cave that Larry's talking about, that's the way to do it. Throw one of them boots in there. I guarantee you they're coming out, and they're coming out with a vengeance. Or put Sammy up in the cave and give him some beans. They're coming out.
Ooh, some beans and chili, man. That'll eradicate.
There's your self defense, Larry.
That will kill a couple skulls and souls on your holes. That will.
Cowboy Billy baked beans. I guarantee you, you get you a can of Cowboy Billy baked beans. If any terrorist kidnaps you, they're going to let you go within 15 minutes. They're not going to be able to take it. They're going to let you go. I guarantee it. If they don't, they've got an iron gut and a gas mask on or something. Because no human could survive Cowboy Billy baked beans, especially if they're given to Sammy. I'm just saying.
That's painful.
I'm just saying. But there's some self-defense. But, you know, wisdom, that's going to be the key. Your wisdom's going to keep you safe, you know? It's like, you know, they say if you play with fire, you're going to get burnt. How many people do you think actually paid attention to that phrase, you know? Fire with wisdom, you know, fire can be an amazing thing. But if you're playing with it, then essentially you're being stupid, you know? Like running over throwing a can of gas onto the fire to see how big of a poof you can get. You might be part of that poof on the way out, you know?
Yeah.
My friend... A long time ago, he was going to get the campfire going at the campsite one time. So he's got a can of lantern fluid. And so he takes his lantern fluid and he sloshes it over towards the fire. And, of course, he got the fire going, but he also set fire to the can. And he panics and he throws it over there in the grass. So now there's a flaming can of lantern fluid sitting over there at the grass. And what's he do? He runs over there to stomp on it. Every time he stomps on it, a big old flame would shoot out the other side of it like a flamethrower. And I'm like, dude, you're going to blow your leg off. But there's where the difference between...
Yeah, many years ago, as you guys know, I grew up, I moved away from home when I was quite young, and I lived out on some acreage out of a rusty old combi van, and used to cook my food on an open fire there, and along came a fella who was quite a bit older than me, but mentally about the same age as me, and he wanted to help, you know, help and hang out for a while, so I had him live out at the property there with me for about a week he lasted. But there was one morning there where it was, you know, freezing cold, and I couldn't be bothered, you know, getting the kindling and doing the fire properly. So I've gone and siphoned a bit of fuel out of the gas tank there of the vehicle and walked over and, you know, poured all this fuel onto the fire and onto me wood, and I've walked away to go and get myself a stick. You know, and I was going to dip the stick in the last of the fuel I had in this can, light the end of the stick, and stick the stick in. Anyway, I've wandered over there, grabbed my stick, and I've lifted up the stick and turned around just as I've seen him go in hand first with the lighter. Boom! And he's gone back at least 20 feet, mate. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it.
Wow. I've heard stories about basically people carrying a gas can around after doing something and a little spark catching in this ball of fire just kind of following around everywhere they walk, basically the fumes in the air just until it finally hits the gas can.
There's where your common sense is going to come in handy, and your knowledge is going to come in handy of things to do or to not do. Because during the apocalypse, you're obviously not going to be able to run to the dentist or the doctor or, you know, anywhere for that matter, because, you know, it probably wouldn't be a very good idea to even leave your property if all heck is breaking loose. So if you get hurt, if you blow yourself up, then you're up to the knowledge that you got at home. What do you know how to do first aid and all that kind of stuff? So, you know, right now you should be out there researching everything under the sun. If you're concerned about the future of humanity, you know, do something to try to overt instead of create, you know, all this stuff. Sometimes like doomsday scenarios can end up being self-fulfilled prophecies, you know. Everybody's so freaked out about it, everybody's running around trying to prepare for it, and in the process deplete all the resources and stores around, and then something really does happen, you know. We can't restock the shelves, and people start to panic. Oh, look, it's the apocalypse. No, it's the fact that everybody rushed to the store because they thought it was coming. That's why, you know, back during Y2K.
Yeah,
or even during when 9/11 was going on, the very same, and the next day that after 9/11, everybody said the gas prices were going to go up to $5-$10 a gallon, and the lines at the gas stations were a mile long because everybody was freaking out thinking they weren't going to be able to get no fuel. And then there were people fighting in line over whether or not they could get fuel or not. You see, it's just sometimes it can be self-fulfilled. Am I wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Don't ever jump to the mic at once.
Hey, man, I chipped my tooth last night, all right? I'm not doing that again.
But either way, you know, common sense, man. And that's part of what brings you to the whole battle-weary part, man. Dang, how long can a person sit back and think about all the things that are going wrong with the world? And we're sitting here, sometimes it gets emotional. Sometimes I actually get to tears thinking about half the stuff that's going on, you know? And I want to do something good for the world, and it's so overwhelming that I can't really seem to, I don't feel like I can reach enough people with common sense. And then when you do, you reach out and you actually do get the word out to people, then you got to wonder how many of those people are actually putting that in action. How many people are actually out there doing things to benefit themselves, such as, you know, using the internet instead of searching up porn or whatever. They're out there searching up how to grow food or, you know, something useful as opposed to whatever, you know, playing some stupid online video game.
Well, there's stuff like that on the internet.
Oh, there's all kinds of trash on the internet, man. I typed in the White House one time. You can check it out, man. Make sure you get to whitehouse.gov, not the whitehouse.com. It's just...
No. My question was, what? There's science on the internet.
Yeah, there's science out there. But the thing is, if it's used as a tool, then it's a great research thing, man.
It is. Yeah. Well, just look at what it is drawn together here. Without the internet, we wouldn't have the Knights of the Round Table. We wouldn't have each other.
No. Nope.
We would not have a clue about free energy. We would not have a clue about the devices we work on. We would not be conglomeratively working together. We would have none of this without the internet. You know? Like, maybe on a local point of view, maybe you might find a mate down the street or something who's half interested in it and wants to hang out and do stuff like that, but we would never have the amount of people and the amount of knowledge flow that we do.
Right, hold on. Ask yourself right now that same question. Who do you have to go and work with right now?
All of us.
Each of you, think about it. Who's around nearby that you can work with right now?
I live in Roxby Downs in the middle of the South Australian desert, so I'm going to honestly say nobody.
Ditto.
Well, I got Larry that's not too far away from me. I got Larry that's not too far. And also got friends in my local community that I have networked with that we all work on alternative energy stuff. So on that aspect, you know, I've got people nearby. And also,
yeah, I have a neighborhood full of rocks.
Well, I have a neighborhood full of sand dunes.
Do you know what you can do with that neighborhood full of rocks, Larry?
Teach the kids.
You could build a castle, man.
Well, I can make glass.
Hey, yeah. Cultists can make the windows for your castle and ship them over.
Would you like silicon windows, sir?
But either way, you know, there's where the knowledge is, man. You know, he's got rocks in his neighborhood. That's all he's got. Cultists has sand. He'd take that sand together with some stuff that I'm sure that you got in your neighborhood, make some concrete and build us all a big old giant castle. That's what we need. We need a giant medieval castle that's all alternative energy.
Hey, and the color of my sand will match Larry's glasses when we melt it down too.
Yeah,
I mean, nice rose colored windows everywhere.
That's it.
Hey.
I didn't know that you had red bloodshot sand.
And,
yeah, like everywhere.
And if there's any uranium in there, there might be a good chance we could get a little bit of glowing in the dark kind of thing going on.
Hey,
you know, fluorescence or something.
There you go.
Huh?
There's definitely some ionization in the air out here. That's a new secret.
Fire up your Tesla coil and the whole castle glows in the dark. Wouldn't that be cool? I'm just saying.
Oh, I still want some irradiated copper.
Well, what do you guys say we take a quick music break
Perfect
and refresh
time.
Our coffee?
I was just about to tell you that.
I'm going to put on this song here. This is an old song, but it's pretty kind of funny. You ever heard the Rappin' Duke? Sean Brown?
Sounds familiar.
He's talking
you
about...
You played him before?
I think so, but he's talking about... It's one point he's talking about how you bring 100 guys or something like that, and that's like 99 pallbearers or something like that. I don't know. Just listen to the lyrics. Listen to the
Alrighty,
lyrics.
Boys.
It's funny. Anyway, stay tuned. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table.
So you think you're bad with your rap? Well, I'll tell ya, pilgrim. I started the crap. When you were in diapers and wetting the sheets, I was at the Ponderosa rapping to the beat. Da ha, da ha, da ha 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 ha. Sure, I rustled some cattle and tended the sheep, but my main concern was rapping to the beat. I don't bother nobody, I'm a real nice guy, kinda laid back like a dead fly. Da ha, da ha, da ha 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 ha. Da ha da ha da ha ha. I'm talking here and now. Later for the cattle and rustling the cow. If I had a chance to do a repeat, you can bet your sweet dippy I'd be rapping to the beat. Da ha da ha da ha ha ha. Que pasa, amigos? Not a pasa, I see. 200 punks, well what you gonna do? I got 2 6 shooters that'll see me through. That's 12 dead and 188 pallbearers. Da ha, da ha, da ha 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 ha. What I do on your grave won't pass for flowers either. Now Curtis Blow, Run DMC, you haven't heard a rap till you heard it from me. I'm the baddest rapper in history, and there'll be no more after me. Da ha, da ha, da ha 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 ha. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Santa Barbara that is, swimming pools, and movie starts. Voila, first thing you know, Ron's the president. The kinfolk said, Ron, move away from there. Said in the White House is where you ought to be. So he loaded up the Lincoln and he moved to D.C. Washington, that is. Politicians taking a sip. Foreign dignitaries taking a trip. High tax and plenty Cadillacs. Da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha. Now you see me in my movies doing my thing, but deep in my heart I've wanted to sing. Way down up on the Swanee River, far, far away. Titwillow. I don't think that's your style, but I'll tell ya, Pilgrim, I'm versatile. Aretha Franklin, Aretha Franklin, Aretha Franklin, let me rock ya, let me rock ya, Aretha Franklin, let me rock ya, Aretha Franklin, that's all I wanna do, Aretha Franklin. Da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha. I'm feeling the groove now, Pilgrim. Party over here, party over there. There's nothing to it the way we do it. Whoop, whoop. East Coast, West Coast, Texas. Every time I put on pants, I tell ya, Pilgrim, I wanna dance. I put a quarter in the juke, then I commence to doin' the duke. Da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha. It's pretty easy, as you can see, just move your arms kinda freely. Do a pause and take a step, and just be sure the beat is kept. Da ha, da ha, da ha, 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 ha. I was at the Ponderosa rapping to the beat, trying to cool off from the desert heat. I discovered something really neat. The Duke has moves with his feet. Da ha, da ha, da ha. I want plenty of ladies with my charms, but they like me the most for the moves of my arms. Whoa, whoa. I'm gonna rap in the east, gonna rap in the west. I'll show ya, Pilgrim, who's the best. Nothing to it the way we do it. Skibble a bebop, weebop, Scooby-Doo. Guess what, America, we love you. Da ha, da ha, da ha, da ha.
everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. There's been a few episodes that we've talked about actually finding an island somewhere and building our own self-sustained community, or, you know, all coming together somewhere in a group. You know, I think about that a lot. And as crazy it may sound, trying to get all those folks together in one, that would probably be the best community. And I think that we wouldn't need a leader of that group. All we would need is a law of common sense. You know, if it's common sense, you can't really go wrong. You know, of course, you know, Murphy's Law is going to kick in there once in a while, and even common sense won't help you out. But for the most part, you know, common sense says if you stick your finger in the fire, you're going to get burnt. And so the groups around here, the Knights of the Round Table, we're not about to run around sticking our finger in the fire. Now, some of us will shake hands with a bolt of lightning, you know, or touch things, wires that, in our labs that we shouldn't touch. But, you know, common sense, if it's electrified, you don't want to grab a hold of it. What do you guys think about that?
Never learn electrical safety by accident.
Yeah, that's the point, man. But could you imagine a society that was ruled by common sense alone?
Ugh.
Is it possible? What'd you say, Mitko?
Oh, poor Mitko's got a busted internet connection again.
Oh, man, what a drag. I want to hear what he had to say. Tell him to type it in.
I'm saying it would be very boring.
It would be very boring. Yep.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess you're right, man. There wouldn't be no explosions on the right or people getting bloody over on the left. And all right, everybody go ahead and just keep up with what you're doing. They might put us out of a job, man. We won't be able to preach common sense if everybody's doing it. But
Around discovery is discovered by accident.
Yeah, you're right.
And by not obeying the laws.
The laws of physics or the laws of the land?
All the laws.
Okay, I'm with you. Now, I'm a rebel against the laws of physics. So when the laws of physics cops show up, they're gonna try to come get me. You know. Like, you can't do that. And I said, well, yeah, why not? Catch me if you can. Can't catch me because I'm the gingerbread man.
Gingerbread man.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Awesome.
So, you know, I just, like I said, you know, becoming battle weary out there in the world of apocalypse, chaos, and all that kind of stuff, man, it'll wear you down. It'll depress you, it'll make you physically ill, and so finding people out there of like minds around the world is another one of the benefits of this thing we call the internet. You know, you get out there, and heck, right now, while you and I is having a peaceful conversation about things, ways to make the world better, you could actually take and tune over to other people who are sitting there cussing each other up and down. Hey, you know, you were trolling my YouTube channel and this and that, and you're a scumbag or whatever, you know. And so you could find all the filth and trash that you want to your heart's content. I mean, you could fill your heart up with all the hate and discontent and doomsday that you want. I'm kind of liking it over here where, you know, well, we talk about certain things. You know, it's interesting. We got a lot of different discoveries, and, you know, we kind of point each other in the right direction as opposed to the wrong direction. So I think what we got going on is worth keeping. What do you guys think?
It's excellent.
I was going to say that discussion earlier where he said it would be boring, I think it would only be boring to the boring people.
Yeah, well,
people who have to have a show that's basically, you know, people getting hurt, and, you know, it's the ball whacking show on Idiocracy, where, you know, the guy just basically gets hit in the testicles every way imaginable. And this is supposed to be entertainment, and that's what we're in. That's the world we're in now. People are that up and down.
You're dead right. That is the world that we live in, where, like, you know, Justin Bieber gets, you know, the most attention on the day that the Higgs boson is discovered by the LHC. Like, what the? Like, we've just made the greatest scientific discovery of the 21st century, and let's focus on Justin Bieber.
So, so what I do?
Is that the priority of the world? Justin Bieber's prioritized? What?
So would I be wrong in saying to the world out there, as it stands right now, that if you want to not spill your beer, stay off the trampoline?
That's a good one. Very good.
I get on the trampoline with my beer, and if it ends up on my shirt, who do I got to blame?
Sick, I've got a sippy cup.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. But then you're liable to chip
outside the box.
Then you're liable to chip a tooth.
I can have my cake and eat it too.
I don't think it's going to work, brother. Yeah, unless you get one of those hats that has the hoses and straws. But then you're gonna.
Hey, there you go.
Then when you're bouncing up and down, you're gonna shake the suds in your beer and choke as the spraying down the back.
That's not gonna settle well in the belly, is it?
Is there any way to physically drink beer while you're jumping up and down on a trampoline without spilling it on yourself or choking?
Yeah, you gotta make it flat first.
Ugh.
Ugh. I know. You don't want pizza in your belly. Come on, let's think about that. Way more drama than it's worth.
All right, let's take it to a safer deal. Is there any way to eat a vanilla cream pie with lots of whipped topping on a trampoline without hitting yourself in the face?
I'm sure if you're skilled enough, you can do it.
There's got to be
practice all over you.
What he's saying is, if you spent enough time hitting yourself in the face while doing it, you'll eventually get it down and be able to do it, because practice makes perfect.
All right, yeah, well, sure. In the learning process, get it all on video and monetize it.
Better still, send me the original footage. I'll put it on my YouTube. I'll monetize it for you.
Yeah, and then he will, do a dubstep of a pie hitting you in the face every 5 seconds.
I have a guy who knows a guy who can do that. Just saying.
That's why we still need to do our electrical shock one, man.
Oh, we're totally doing that. Don't you worry. We just have to get it. Get it organized.
Well, I'll take a hit for the team as long as it gets on that video.
Yeah.
If that video don't go viral, ain't none going viral.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, anyway, that's like I said, you know, if you don't want to spill your beer, stay off the trampoline, you know. Come on. It's that easy. I mean, to me, it's like common sense is like, you know, I live and breathe common sense. Now, keep in mind, I still do stupid things, you know. And I like, you know, maybe I'll go get mad and I'll kick the door and it'll come back and hit me in the face or something like that, you know. And I should have known, for every action is an equal and opposite reaction. So if I kick that door and there's something behind that door that's going to deflect that door back into my face, then who do I have to blame for, you know, when I kick that door? I think it was Mitko's fault.
Blame physics.
It was Mitko's fault.
I thought we were going with the general rule of, you know, what everybody else was blaming, and just, you know, just blame Obama or whoever.
Well, I mean, we could have a centralized punching bag, because, I mean, come on, look at Bush. Bush got blamed for everything, including solar flares. It was his fault, you know. Earthquake happened. Bush did it. You know, I get so tired of hearing.
He gets blamed for a bunch of stuff that sooner or later people will realize he didn't have anything to do with, and that way no one's paying attention to what he actually did do.
Yeah, of course he did a lot of. They all did a lot of crazy stuff, and ain't none of one of them got clean hands. But come on, man, everybody didn't do everything. I mean, just because, you know, I got to admit, whenever I was a kid, my mom called me her wild child, and so every time something went wrong, my brothers would point at me and say I did it, and, you know, 9 times out of 10, I did do it. But this time, I didn't do it. But, you know, it looks like I did, because, you know, it's my what's that word, something like that, motif, or, no, what's the word I'm looking for?
Motive. Oh, you're talking about method of operation.
Yeah, modus operandi or something like that. That's like something he would have done. Yeah, so he must be guilty. But actually, I didn't do it. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But instead of blaming people, it'd be best just to try to use common sense and not have yourself in that position to begin with, you know. Common sense says if you slam your toe into the coffee table, you know, it's going to hurt. So be prepared. Anyway, anybody else got any common sense words of wisdom? Like, you know, what's that guy Confucius say? I ain't even going to go there.
I'm going to say.
He could take that in all kinds of extremes.
Yeah, the only one I can think of with that I can't say on radio.
Yeah. Anyway.
Sorry.
It's better left outside.
I've been brought up in poor conditions. Sorry.
Does it have anything to do with standing on the toilet?
No.
No, it had something to do with flying over to Bangkok, but...
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Or itchy butt.
Have to have some pretty big wife rights to say that on radio, though. This will beat me up.
Yeah. Anyway, well, back to common sense. Common sense should rule everybody's life, but you know, there's one guy out there. I've been trying to get him on a radio show, and he talks about common sense all the time, and he does it in a funny way. The guy just
who do I have to get hold of? Because just so the listeners know, not next week, but the week after, we've got Robert Murray Smith coming on the show.
I will, as soon as the show's over, I'll see if I can get a link to his YouTube channel and go listen to him. Now, only thing is, he actually does his own radio show on a Blog Talk Radio or something like that, too. But only thing is, every once in a while, he drops a word or two, so he tries not to, but I'm going to try to...
He's talking about the guy he's interested in.
Sorry.
About, not Robert.
Sorry.
Oh yeah. Well, anyway, I'll get a link to that that guy. I mean, he would be a great asset to the Knights of the Round Table because the man is awesome. He just knows common sense, you know, and it's fun to listen to him talk because the way he delivers his message is a hoot. And you know, sometimes that's the best teacher. Comedy can be a good teacher, you know. It's if people learn a lot better if they're enjoying what they're listening to, you know.
Yeah. There's a lot of knowledge interwoven into this fictional character this guy was doing for a while called Dr. Steele, and that's how he delivers it. Is, you know, he peppers it with humor so that people stay interested, you know.
Well, I like it. I like what you're talking about. I've seen some of the videos, but that last one you sent me to, I mean, I think I really honestly believe that after watching that video, I'm slightly mentally ill.
Was that Dr. Steele, though, or was that Agamemnon Tiberius Vacuum? Because, you know, that guy's just...
That's the vacuum guy. He was talking to Dr. Steele in the deal. But
yeah.
the final exchange between the two of them when they're trying to decide whether or not they're going to get together for this meeting or whatever is the, you know, whole, you know, back and forth, you know, I'm like, oh my God. And he's like, no, yeah,
the
wait,
hold. Finger thing, and the guy goes, ah, touche.
Yeah.
You're like, what? What happened here?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I even typed a comment in there. I said, I think after seeing that video, you should send that link around to everybody if you remember it. But, yeah, I think after watching that particular portion of the video that I'm, like, seriously mentally ill after that because it's
you,
like...
You should avoid the rest of the Agamemnon's videos then if that's the case.
Well, you know, for somebody who tries to think logically and tries to watch common sense, and then you're seeing this total exchange of, I won't know what to call it outside of buffoonery, you know.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you're familiar with Family Guy, this guy is apparently so out there that he actually, because he saw him somewhere online, he went ahead and dropped his name in one of the Family Guy episodes Seth MacFarlane did.
Huh.
So, he has a retort to it too. He's like, oh hey, no, all sales are final. And the guy that we're talking about goes, yeah, but you were Seth MacFarlane or Peter Griffin. That's what it was. He said you were Peter Griffin during the sale though. And then he goes, take that, Seth MacFarlane. Use my name in vain.
Yeah, that's I'll tell you though. Comedy though, Muddy's always says that he's always talked about how you will excel in things that you love to do as opposed to things that you can't stand to do. But you know, I think that's what kind of helps everybody develop their own individual skills and talents and knowledges. These are things you're interested in. But what I like about the Knights of the Round Table is the diversity of all these things that are interested in, things that I, you know, don't necessarily excel at. You know, Colta said it earlier to some way, you know, my strengths are your weaknesses and vice versa.
And one fails, the other prevails.
Yeah.
And it's not talking about failure as such. It's just like, as I explained before, it's
to have, like, resources.
Yeah, it's to do with, you know, one's going to have knowledge in a specific subject as opposed to another person. And when we all come together, we share that knowledge. And we're, you know, a person is a bridge to that knowledge, you know, where one doesn't understand something, the other will explain it, then they cotton onto it, and then they move on with their project. And they're like, wow, yeah, sweet, straight into it, you know, so.
You ever seen that that love cartoon, or actually, there's a show out there, what do they call it? I can't remember. It's basically, I can't remember. It's a group of people, when they all get together and they're fighting the bad guys, they have separate machineries, and all these machineries can combine into one giant robot and work together.
Voltron.
Yeah, something like that. But
we're not talking about Power Rangers. We're going back like 20 years.
Yeah, Power Rangers is the one that I was thinking about.
No, Voltron, mate.
Okay, Voltron's the newest one then. But either way, think about this. If our crew, of our dream team that we got right here, was into one of those giant pieces of machinery, and then some other people got into a different piece of machinery, I think we'd fare better, because we'd be working in conjunction with each other. You'd be like, you know, hey, look out over there on the left, you know, and then we'd be working back and forth as a team, as opposed to these other guys that'd be over there breakdancing with their big old giant Voltron machine, and you know what I'm saying?
So if they're breakdancing with their big old machine, I'm not sure who won there.
Well, it's not going to be intentional breakdancing. It's going to look like they're breakdancing because they're fighting against each other.
So it's going to look like they're dancing, but they're actually breaking their machine?
Yeah. They're going to be going, one says, no, we got to go this way. And the other one's going, no, we're going this way, whether you like it or not. And the other one's punching the other one in the side of the head, you know. Hey, get off me, you know, and they're all fighting amongst each other, so it looks like this guy's over there doing the breakdance robot and spinning around and all that kind of stuff, and all they're doing is having a war while we're putting a beat down on them. That's the difference, man, teamwork as opposed to the other, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
And the scary thing is,
we can either work together, or we can try and run off individually and do everything all by our little lonesome. And just as we've discussed, with the, you know, one where one fails, the other prevails. When you try and run off and do it all by yourself, you know, eventually you're going to hit a wall, and you are going to need to ask for help. Simple.
Yep.
You know, and if you've got no one around, if you've just been a snob and you treat everyone like crap, and you don't interact, and when it comes time to ask for help, where are you going to turn?
Well,
you know,
I think if you've got the drive to do something, you can do it on your own, but you will never get there in the time frame that a group of people working together will get there. They're going to get there much faster.
True. You are dead right in that. I'll rephrase it. You make it more difficult on yourself by not interacting and not trying to, you know, work as a team. That's where teamwork, you know, it's a big, there's no I in team.
Well, you know? And if you're in it for yourself, then chances are, you know, whatever result you get, it's going to be on yourself, and that's all you get. But if you're in it for the team, the world, you know, trying to make the world a better place for a better cause, and, you know, there's no pride loss, you know, in that whole deal. You know what I'm saying? You can't go wrong whenever you're doing right. I, you know.
Yeah. Very true. You know, even if you make a mistake, as long as you've got the integrity and the guts to stand up and go, okay, I got that wrong, or I made a mistake there. Sorry, guys. Who cares?
Yeah, but see, the deal is,
go back to what you said. She says you can't go wrong when you're doing right. There's an opposite side to that phrase. And that's that no matter how much you think you're doing the right thing, if what you're doing is producing something that's wrong, then you must be doing something wrong.
Yeah, well,
like we've had a war on poverty. we have more poverty than we've ever had before. We had a war on drugs, right? We've got this massive...
It's time to have a war on money and money.
Yeah,
and
but
jobs.
See, where,
money and
jobs, yeah. Where the difference...
I mean, you know, if the fact that the fact that they're not succeeding shows they're not doing the right thing.
Where the difference lies in the road to intention, the road to intention was paved by disaster. Where the difference lies in there is the fact that I got cultists to say, hey, brother, we might not want to do that because if we do that, this could happen. And I say, hey, that's a good point, you know. And so we steer off in a different direction and do it the right way. So I understand exactly what you're saying.
So... Well, no, I'm just saying, though, if people claim they're doing something that's the right thing and it's for, you know, for the right reason and everything, and they're using the right method and all, and they're not getting good results, then you know that should tell you that they're not, you know, they're wrong, and they need to admit that they're wrong and try something different.
Exactly. That's where common sense is going to come in. You know, you've done this, 55 to 100 times, and it's always getting the same result. And you're either insane.
I would say, how long has the war on drugs been going on?
Forever. You know? And all it's doing is making it worse.
Yep.
You know?
So, and you know, this is the thing, is that all the things that they're failing at are wars.
Well, look back during the Prohibition.
The common denominator here is, you're waging war. Stop waging war.
They should
Stop fighting.
They should have learned from the Prohibition of alcohol. You know, back during the Prohibition, they had speakeasies that popped up. And suddenly, once you got all these speakeasies, now you got an underground black market of the same product that you're trying to ban. And so now you got to rush in.
And that's the thing, though, is it's feeding an underground nest of vipers, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's out in the open. They can't hide and do their dirty business, you know?
Yeah.
Don't tell people they can't do things, or they'll just, you know, sneak around and do it illegally, and then they'll end up basically with a big collusion of mobsters running things.
If you want to stop people from doing drugs, you're not going to stop them from doing drugs if they want to do the drugs. You're not going to stop them because they're going to find a way to do whatever it is that they want to do. You know, and so with that said, you know, the war on drugs is just stupid to begin with, because you know, I'm 48 years old, and I've been to a lot of rock concerts. You can stand there in a rock concert, and the cloud of grass is just like it's like smog over a city, man. And
this is a thing.
It wasn't legal then.
If you want to solve a problem, the best way to solve the problem is understand the problem you're dealing with is a symptom of something else, and solve the root, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the biggest root that we've been finding with all the research that's been done on drug use and whatnot is that the people who get addicted, not the people who just use and then they walk away and not care about it, because there are tons of people that are like that, you know.
Well,
they've got their statistics stacked to make it look like if you use those drugs, you're going to get addicted. There's no way to get around it, and it's not true. Most people have no problem walking away from this stuff. It's the people that there's something different about that are getting addicted. And they're the ones that are breaking windows to get more and whatnot, to steal your, you know, whatever is laying on your, you know, the seat of your car. Figure out why they're different, you know. And, I mean, a lot of the research is pointing that these are people who came from horribly abusive and neglectful families.
Yeah.
And there's a part of their brain that is damaged so that it's not producing chemicals that normal people have. So the drug is a replacement.
Well,
so, you know, using that research, instead of a war on drugs, we need to have an intervention, and you know, stop beating your kids, stop the war period, stop, you know, abusing your kids, and that will stop the drug abuse.
Yeah, and also the war on the war on drugs has unintended consequences, such as the industrial hemp business. You know, a lot of people think that the reason why they made hemp illegal was because they were afraid that you could grow marijuana in a hemp field, which, if you did the research, you know that hemp comes from the cannabis strain, but it doesn't have the THC, and if you try to grow the two together, they'll cross-pollinate, and it won't you won't grow the THC side of the deal. So, you know, had they done full research back in the day, they would say, okay, you can go ahead and grow all the marijuana you want. That's just it, though.
They did do the research, and the people who were in power and wanted more power said, hey, put that away. Put that away. No, don't tell anybody about that. Put that away.
Yeah, I think that's what it more comes down to.
Yeah, but see,
you're losing those votes.
If they wanted to stop the drug portion of it, they could allow the people to grow all the marijuana they wanted. Say, just plug your field full of it. And in the middle of the night, instead of crop dusting us with chemtrails, they just go over this field and throw down a whole bunch of hemp seeds and dilute the hemp anyway. So, if you wanted to allow people to grow industrial hemp, allow them to grow industrial hemp. I mean, they're not going to get stoned off of it. But there's so many benefits.
See, there's actually as much THC in lettuce as there is in industrial hemp.
Yeah.
All right, so if it's not the same, it's very, very close. Like, it's
really there's THC in lettuce.
Yep. Almost every plant. Every green leafing plant has
THC. Don't you? I try blowing it down.
That's why I say, don't go smoking lettuce.
You don't tell me about the lettuce leaves laid out on my monitor trying to draw it out, okay?
Yeah, during the break, Cultus is going to rush in there and get him a salad, man.
And that's what they used to call it, a lot of people that I knew here in town, man. We're going to go get a sack of salad. We'll be back.
He was like, yo, Cultus, till he overdosed on lettuce.
But anyway, they could have instead of, going by brute force and kicking people's doors in and shooting people that in the middle of the night, suddenly their house got raided and they try to defend themselves and reach for a gun and they get shot, or the dog gets shot, or the kid gets shot.
And you are pointing out something right there that needs to be understood. Any threat of violence is ultimately a death threat.
Yep.
Because if they're threatening you with violence over something and you keep refusing to go along with it, no matter how much violence they apply to you, they will keep doubling down until eventually the final threat is, if you don't stop doing whatever it is, or you don't do what we insist that you do, we will kill you.
Yep.
So your government is telling you, when they make a law, if you don't do what we tell you to, we are going to kill you.
Yeah, and how
can you possibly befriend something like that? That's like Jews going over and hanging out with the Nazi party.
It could be something as simple.
Hang out with people like that.
It could be something as simple as a jaywalking ticket, you know? You get a jaywalking ticket. You don't show up in court, so they put a warrant out for your arrest. And then after a while, it gets to where the ticket is getting higher and higher, and the range from a simple infraction is up to a misdemeanor, and then eventually it's up to a felony, and suddenly they're kicking your door in the middle of the night, and you freak out and reach for your gun because you think you're being burglarized, and you get shot. Now, where was it at the beginning of that whole deal where they said, look, all right, this guy has a jaywalking ticket. He hasn't paid for this ticket. He hasn't showed up in court. What we're going to do is we're just going to put like a lien on his taxes or something like that. And whenever he gets his taxes, we're going to automatically deduct a fine and send him a receipt and say, we took his money out because he didn't pay his jaywalking ticket. But instead,
that's still theft.
Yeah, well, either way, it's better than...
All of it's theft and extortion and violence, man.
It's all bad. It's better than the alternative of escalating it one step at a time, to the point of death.
Go back to what you initially said. It's better than, okay? Just let's focus on that part of what you're saying there. What you are saying, okay, is that for someone to be completely and totally enslaved, where they live their whole life under the rule of a master, where they have to do the work the person tells them, and everything that they produce they is taken from, it's okay to only go to that guy's house and work for him for free 10% of the time. It's not okay. Slavery of any kind is not okay, no matter what the percentage is. And that's the problem with what we've got right now, is we've let ourselves slide down this slippery slope where we said, well, it's better than the other thing.
Well,
so they keep offering a worse thing to get you to take the thing that they actually want you to take.
I'm just trying to say to get to the other side of the fence, de-escalation is better than escalation. I would rather de-escalate it down to a better than for the moment.
It's a better solution. I think there's a much better solution. We need to start a party of our own and just collectively gather the knowledge, create the concept of what type of government would we really want, and then literally everyone that's in that party, they go and then they infiltrate other parties and get elected.
That's the way the Democrats did it.
Plans to get elected at a certain time. we end up basically, we're all the ones that are in the offices, and then we've already got the plans. So we're like, okay, well, this is how things are going to be changed from now on. You know, the presidential office, the congressional offices, all the way down to the police officers. You're all the live Truman Show. Okay, we're public officials, so therefore our lives are public. We came into the public office, we knew full well what we were planning on doing, and from now on, if you want to be in public office, you have to understand and be voluntarily willing to make your life public. Meanwhile, the private citizens, there's a reason why they're called private citizens. Their life is private until they choose to give it up or to do something to someone else so bad that that person is willing to make their life public and therefore exposing your life where it intersects with their life to try to get something solved. Leave them alone otherwise, you know?
All right, well, I don't mind that whole deal, but if I become a public office guy, the bathroom has to be sacred, so you got to make it small enough where we can't fit more than one person in there, but big enough to where you can actually reach the paper, and no
then
cameras.
Then you're going to have to build like a Faraday cage in your bathroom so you can't be making phone calls or connecting to
No phone calls. It's just business as usual, and then that's it. You know, you get in, get out, and that's it. And if you're in there too doggone long, they'll call the medic.
And this is a thing.
Knock
though,
on the door.
This is a thing, though. we'll make the bathroom public too. We just do it with a microphone.
Yeah, that wouldn't be nice.
Somebody will be willing to have to listen to whatever other business is going in there in order to make sure they're not hearing any clicks or keys or anything like that. You're texting someone or you're on the phone talking to somebody. And this is the thing, too. Whatever it is you've done in there, if you do something that actually matters, then everybody's going to have to listen to it. Like, if you're making some shady deal with Exxon, you know, with one of the CEOs to do something, then, you know,
kinda
you
like,
have to go ahead and pull that out and make it evidence, you know.
Kind of like when Obama got caught on,
I mean, how many dirty deals were probably done in men's restrooms where no one else was around listening while they were busy, you know, doing their business and talking back and forth across the stall, you know?
I don't know, but Obama did it right out there in public, told old Putin that when after the election he'll be more flexible, so I wonder what that all meant. I'm just saying.
Well, he sent the bust of Winston Churchill back to England and told them to, you know, gave him the middle finger. So, and this other thing is, he has literally, many times, he's done one thing, like, with people who are normally our allies, where, you know, he's basically giving them the finger and saying, we're not helping you, then turn around and help other people with war effort. I mean, giving them weapons and helping them out to fight and kill people that normally we wouldn't
help. He's talking about saving the children while drones striking the other children across the globe, man.
Right, and the thing that I saw through this thing that I was watching, you can look at it if you want. It's Obama's America in 2016 or something like that. You know, ultimately, if you look at the root behind what he's actually doing, every action, no matter how weird it seems and disjointed and disconnected and you know, counterproductive against each other, what it ultimately is the only thing that the common thread is that this is an anti-colonial and anti- I don't know. I guess like a kind of an anti-establishment type thing.
It's the Cloward and Piven, man. It's the whole overwhelm the system until it collapses and build a new system, you know, while you're doing it. And so when they're letting all these people come across the borders, I'm not, you know, America's a melting pot, you know, but you got to come through the door, you know. Don't come over the back of the fence, come through the gate and work it out that way. I mean, what really makes me so mad is that while all this stuff is going on down there in Mexico, I got a buddy over in Australia who would love to come live in America, you know, and he's going through, they've already took money from him and he still hasn't got, you know, that resolved and all that kind of stuff. And so he's trying to go through the legal way. And he ain't getting no help. But if he was to come over the fence, so maybe that's what you should do, cultists, immigrate from Mexico, and you got his name.
Yeah. Actually, there's a...
And the government will give me $6,000 to house you.
Si, senor.
There's another thing, like, I think it's Guatemala or something, some other countries like that where a lot of the drug lord nonsense is going on. They're giving them a special free ticket.
Yeah, so come from Guatemala.
Mexican people, you know.
But the whole thing is, man, the hypocrisy of it, the idiocy of what's going on. I mean, it's to overwhelm the system. You know, yeah, the Democrats are going to get a whole lot of extra voters because everybody's going to think that, look at them, like they're the saviors. You allowed me to come here, so I'm going to vote for you, so you'll allow me to stay here, you know, that kind of deal. You know, common sense. The whole doggone thing lacks common sense. I mean, to me...
I was going to say, they're bringing people in who are of a very socialistic mentality, so they're going to let the government grow bigger and get bigger and, you know, become more of a bear than it already is.
Yeah.
Because that's what they want. And, you know, I mean, it's as simple as this. Okay, if you want to Jim Jones somebody, you pick the people who basically have already been drinking Kool-Aid and are cool with drinking Kool-Aid. They like the flavor of Kool-Aid, you know? Yeah. And that's what they're doing to them. They're bringing people that are already used to the flavor of Kool-Aid. They like it, and they're willing to drink it. Now they can put whatever they want in that Kool-Aid that they're giving to them, and they know they'll just drink it right up.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, what they're going to end up with, and maybe it'll be 10 years down the line or 20 years down the line, what they're going to end up with is something worse than what they came from, because now the system's already been put in place for a totalitarian dictatorship of epic proportions, to where, you know, you don't have no rights, you don't have no freedoms.
It's going to be a technological nightmare, too. The only people that are going to be able to save us are people like Anonymous and, you know, hackerspaces,
yep,
and whatnot.
And there you go. You just hit on another key deal. All you're going to do from this point on, you know, while you're trying to create this one world system, is create more rebels to the deal, because people, once they taste freedom, they won't go back peacefully. You know, once you understand. Go ahead, Coulter.
Someone like Anonymous has already proven point that they are pretty much unstoppable if they want to come together and deal with a situation like with the what's the WikiLeaks fellow's name? Julian Assange, when when the government turned around and froze all of his accounts and MasterCard and that blocked all his credit cards and everything. Then the Anonymous crowd turned around and blocked them. They went and performed DDoS attacks on several websites and just shut them down and said, well, that's it. You know, this is what's going to happen if you screw with someone like that who's an activist on our behalf.
Yep.
Goodbye. We will shut you down. We're not going to deal with it.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, well, they have the power, mate. They really do. And if the governments of the world think that, you know, the public of the world is just going to sit back and let this crap happen, you know, there's a point. You can only push a man in the shoulder with your finger so many times before he clenches a fist and punches you in the face for it.
Yep.
You know, and that's what's going on. The governments of the world are sitting there poking you in the shoulder, just drilling you in the shoulder with their finger, thinking that they've got it over you. But eventually you're just going to snap and go, sorry, mate, not interested in your crap.
Well, see, and therein lies another deal right there, man. The whole system, the way that they try to fear-monger everybody into following along with the norm, you know, right now, I can see that if something really tragic was to happen, that people would give up their freedom just for a little bit of peace and sanity. But then when it comes down to a certain point, you know, while they're trying to get that peace and sanity, if you go around and you start executing people via guillotines and as a public execution every day and all this kind of stuff, there's going to be rebels who are going to say, oh, no, you're not doing that to my family. Ain't no way. And they're going to take up arms, whether it be a rock, a spear, or whatever, you know. They ban guns in certain areas of the world, and the knife crime goes up exponentially. Or, you know, people, their body's a weapon, you know. They'd kill somebody with their bare hands if need be. You're not going to stop that by trying to regulate out of existence things that, you know, you deem to be dangerous, you know.
Say the best way to stop violence is stop enacting it on people.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And that means all violence. I mean, even
verbal, physical, mental, the lot. Yeah,
because
generally when you say violence, people think physical, but there is more than just physical violence. You know, there is the mental, and there is the emotional, and there is, you know, there's all kinds of different kinds of abuse, you know.
Most physical violence will, the result of it will heal up after a while all on its own, but when it comes to emotional, mental...
Internal scars remain.
Right. Well, it's not even scars. They're literally open wounds until somebody takes a look at what's really wrong with them and they do something about it. So that's just going to keep making them more and more mad over time until eventually you're going to have an explosion. You know?
And in the meantime, while we're all on this giant inner tube of life bouncing down the snow slope of hell, we're losing people. People are flying off in every direction. You know, some of them's jumping off because they just can't take the ride anymore. And so in the process of this stuff, we are being depleted as humanity of some potential knowledge of epic proportions. And I'm saying, like, look, man, we got a brother. We're about to lose this brother or sister over on that side. Throw a rope over to him or duct tape him to the tube or whatever, and let's hang on and ride this out until we can all get some common sense going on. Common sense in the first case would be never get on that tube to begin with. But since we're already there, then now it's a matter of hanging on for dear life, and we don't want to lose people around the world because of all this craziness.
Actually, to give a much better perspective of what we're in right now, we are all animals in a zoo.
Yeah.
And you hear people saying, well, you don't like it in America, then go ahead and move. Well, that's not freedom. Being able to leave one cage and going somewhere else in a zoo to go into another cage is not freedom.
Yeah, but in this day and age, where are you going to move to? You know?
Exactly. They're all cages. I mean, what are you going to do? Move out into the ocean?
You know, you get a deserted...
Kind of an insurmountable, you know, choice for most people.
You get a deserted island out there, which sounds to me like would be the best go at the moment, you know? We all go gather up...
If you can find such a thing.
Yeah, but the problem is, is that deserted island going to be in between two warring nations? Is it going to be in a flood zone? Or is it going to be habitable to the extent where you can actually live a decent life? Or are you going to be having...
Right.
Fire ants crawl across your face while you're trying to sleep, you know? What's those ants over there in Africa that just literally tear up everything in their path? You know? What if you end up on...
There's all kinds of examples of insects that do that.
Right now, it's not so bad where I'm at.
Most of the time, somebody has screwed with their natural environment and they've gotten out of hand.
Yep.
Thinking that they're fixing things. They make a regulation or a law, and then all of a sudden they wonder why they've got locusts or they've got, you know, hordes of ants destroying things or something, you know?
Yep. You know, there's just so many options. I think you better keep your feet grounded where you know where you're at. At least you got some sort of knowledge going on, and try to make your communities better, you know, while you're there. I mean, if the house is dirty, I've said this a million times, if the house is dirty, it's not going to begin to get cleaned up until somebody in that house decides to pick up a broom and a dustpan or something.
Start cleaning up, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't... They raised the debt ceiling here in America, right? That's kind of like basically your sewer backing up into your basement and coming up into the first floor, so you build another floor above the house to move up there and move away from it. Instead of just fixing the septic system so it'll drain back out and clean your house out.
Well, yeah, and right now we're trying to bring freedom to the world. You know, we're trying to disperse, according to the elite, we're trying to disperse freedom and democracy, even though we're a representative republic and never was a democracy. We're trying to disperse democracy to the world, at the same time depleting the freedoms that are here at home and neglecting the poor and starving here. You know, there's people in America that need help. There's people all over the world that need help. But while we're over there warring with other nations who can't seem to get their act together, you know, we're not only killing their people, we're killing our people, we're depleting resources, we're wasting money hand over fist, and at the same time neglecting the same thing that we're supposedly fighting for overseas, freedom and peace and all that. And peace never came from the end of a barrel of gun. I don't care what anybody wants to say, you know, nobody is the winner of a fight. Sure, one guy gets his tooth knocked out and a black eye and he's laying on the ground bloody and in tears, you know, and who won? Seriously, did the guy who just beat the living tar out of this guy win? What did he win? How's he any better?
No, honestly, if the guy that was knocked on the ground either has family or he's still alive,
yeah,
he won a lifetime of sleeping with one eye open.
Yeah, exactly. It's like what
that's what you get
over there in Palestine. There was a guy did an interview on a video, and I wish I had a link to it, but I don't. But essentially, the guy was sitting there asking these two little Palestinian girls, "Do you want peace with Israel?" And they said, "We never want peace with Israel. We hate Israel because they killed our mom and dad." And I'm thinking, my God, how are you ever going to repair that? You can't. You can't repair that, because in their mind, they've been offended so terribly because they've lost their mom and dad. they're going to grow up and be the future warriors, and then they're going to pass that on to their children because they're going to kill somebody on the other side who's going to then, in turn, you know, hate them because they killed their mom and dad. And when does that bloody cycle stop? It goes all the way back to the abuse cycle you were talking about, Thomas. If you beat your children, you're going to send into the world something terrible. You know, and I'm not saying you can't discipline your child. That's not what I'm saying. You got to steer your child in the right direction. But to abuse your child in any form or fashion, you know, you teach that child how to teach their child. And you just perpetuate on all the negativity that we all talk about and are trying to fight against.
Let's investigate that just a second, though, dude. This is the thing, okay? Everybody thinks, you know, abuse is basically like taking a fist and beating on a child.
Well, it could be a word.
That's not what the real abuse is. The real abuse is the parent who cared so little about their child that they were being lazy and wanted to take the shortest shortcut that they could get to the result they wanted from their child, like their child was nothing more than a computer they were programming. And they figured, if I punch this child, he will stop asking me questions so I can watch my TV show.
Yeah.
So the real root, the real abuse is the lazy nature where the parent is looking at the child like, you owe me for bringing you into this world, so you better do what I tell you to, because you're not a citizen, you're a child.
And
the fact is, the child never asked to be born.
If
anyone's owed something, it's the child, you know?
Even if you don't want to get off the couch and go out there and play ball with that child in the front yard, you owe it to that child because you brought that child into this world
Go
out there.
Tough crap, man. If you didn't want to go out there and play ball with that child and spend time with them and teach them about how the world works and everything, you shouldn't have had them then.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that hard to not have kids.
My mother's kind of like that.
So
I can speak firsthand about that for you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Most people, that's the thing, is most people in the world can't.
Yeah.
That's
it's sad, isn't it? Yeah.
It's so prevalent.
Well, I was fortunate.
Not care and just, you know, they and this is the other thing too. They don't have principles. People do not have principles. They have a few words that they go, well, this is the thing to do, but then they have a bunch of loopholes to get out of doing those things, and that makes them no longer a principle. If it's a principle, it's all the time. Don't steal. Okay, never steal. Period. Don't steal. There's no excuse for it. Never make any excuses. Do not steal. That means no taking money out of my check to spend on something without my permission. I didn't give you permission to take that. I don't want it spent on that. I don't want it spent on this. You know, change the tax laws and work our way down to where they're voluntary, they're donation laws, you know?
I was fortunate.
You got a whole structure where you can basically put together a fundraiser to get something done. And if you get the money to do it, great. You go ahead and do it. But if people don't voluntarily get involved and aren't willing to do it, don't hold a gun to their head and force them to do it.
I was fortunate.
You know,
while
it's really a good idea, they'll have to get in and do it, no matter what.
While I had a father who was essentially a deadbeat, I had a mother who played both roles as father and mother and was a wonderful parent and taught me, you know, she's the reason why I am the way that I am, and the reason why my heart's so full of love is because that's the way that she raised me, you know. And so I'm fortunate in that aspect. And, you know, other people hadn't had that luxury, you know. Maybe your mother, you know, wasn't there for you, or, you know, your father wasn't there for you. But the whole key is, you know, the person that brought that life into the world had a responsibility from the get-go to, you know, allow that life to blossom into something wonderful. You know, you could send that child down two different roads. You can be a total jerk to that child all the time, and then that child's going to go out there and be a total jerk out there to somebody else. You know what I mean?
Or they're going to completely withdraw from society and contribute nothing.
Yeah.
Because they're afraid of being a jerk to the rest of the world. They're afraid of becoming what their parents were, you know?
But either way, man, and tell people step back and look at the whole big picture, the whole root cause, just like you've been pointing out, you know, for the longest time, as long as I've known you, you've been pointing out the same thing, getting down to the root of the cause. You know, they're not doing nothing, but at the very least, if they do anything, they treat the symptom and just ignore the cause from the get-go. And in order for us to make this world a better place, that's why I keep saying stuff like, you know, it starts right there at your couch, you know. It's a decision that you make to do anything better in your own personal community, you know. If you see somebody in need, you go over there and help them out. You know, common sense. Coltus, what was you about to say about your mom?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I grew up in a family where, you know, my father worked constantly, like, you know, a couple of jobs at a time, and my mother, she showed pedigree dogs, and unfortunately they came before us kids, and, you know, she would spend every waking moment grooming and petting dogs and worrying about that, and us kids were literally told, go to our rooms and play, children should be seen and not heard. And that was just that. Like, I grew up in my bedroom, you know, with a box of Legos, mate. That's how I... And by the time I got to, you know, my early teenage years, I bailed from home. That's how I ended up out in the middle of the bush living out of a combi van, because...
I want to tell you a sad story, man.
Go on, brother.
My own son, my own personal journey as a father... Yep. I was 20 some odd years old, and I was into the band scene, and I was playing music, you know, and all that kind of stuff, and you know, I kind of didn't spend as much time as I should have with my kids. One day, I was playing some music in my bedroom, and you know, I finally something just dawned on me. I need to go check on my boy, see how he's doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I walked into his room, and I'm standing there at his door. And I'm looking at my boy. He's probably about 5 or 6 years old. And as I'm looking at him, I look around his room. He's got toys scattered all over the room. And he's sitting there, and he's playing his little video game on the Nintendo, you know. And he's got his little thumbs just going to town, you know, on there. And it just hit me like a freaking ton of bricks, man. I look at the things, you know. I'm out there playing music, and I'm spending all my time, and I'm missing out on so much of my son's world. And I looked over there at him, and I said, "Man, this is my boy's world, man." And I bursted into freaking tears. I went over there and I picked my boy up, and he was kind of shocked. And I put him in my arms. I'm hugging on my boy, and I'm telling him, you know, "I'm sorry. I love you so much, son. And I'm gonna make this world a better place for you." But you know, it took me to realize that was his world. That was his entire world. It wasn't Dad out there playing football with him. His world was that little Nintendo, that little video game.
Yep.
You know. And man, I am so glad for that day that I recognized that. And from that point on, I had to force myself. I had to literally force myself to either get away from my guitar or get up off the couch and go do things with that boy, and to let him know on a daily basis how much I loved him. Because, man, you don't get that time back. The first 5 years of his life.
I will say he's five years old. He's already way past the point too, where a lot of the most important development is already over.
Yep.
You got to work extra hard now, man.
Yep.
Life pauses for no man.
Yeah, no matter how well adjusted he might seem now, he probably still should be going and seeing a therapist and digging into some self knowledge.
Well, he always
not that anybody shouldn't be there. Everybody should be doing that, no matter what.
He always
we
knew.
All be going to see counselors, Thomas.
He always knew.
Well, we should all be digging for self knowledge. I mean, you can look online and read up on concepts and stuff like that, and just sit and think about, you know, how do you really see the world?
He always
the best, knew the he best through your history.
The best book I ever read, and I suggest everyone reads this book, is called The Celestine Prophecies. It is a big eye-opener, because it shows you the manipulation in the world.
Well, I'm going to disagree that that's the best book in the world, because that sounds like you're saying only read that book.
No,
read that book. Listen, what did I say? I didn't say you said that. Listen very carefully what I said. I said it sounds like to the listeners,
sounds
the
like
average listeners, they're gonna get that.
Things,
yeah.
So.
No, right. And I didn't say you said it. I said it's going to sound like it to other people. So I'm just interjecting that you should read more than just that book. When you're done with that one, you read don't more, stop. Just keep reading.
Gee whiz, man. That'd be like saying reading. You should only read Spot when you're six and give
right, don't, now listen, dude, listen, man. Don't get frustrated because you and I have the common sense to know this. Understand there are some people out there that may not catch that. Yeah. You see what I mean? I'm just trying to make sure you don't miss that. Help, keep going. Keep going. So about the Celestine prophecies.
Well, I said it.
Well,
maybe you didn't hear as you were cutting me off to tell me that that was the only thing I wanted to.
Alright, peace and love, everybody. You know, I wanted to point out one thing about my son, though. One more thing about my son is, from day one, my son always knew his dad loved him. But I wasn't, like a, what you'd call a full-time dad. I was, I was that cool guy that shows up every once in a while and, you know, hugs his kid, tells him he loves him, that kind of thing. So my son always knew he loved him, but I could have done a whole lot more, you know, in those first 5 years than what I did. And those are the regrets that I carry around even to this very day. My son's got a son of his own, you know. But if it hadn't been for that one day that I realized that my son's world was, you know, in this box, then I, I'd hate to see where my son would be today. You know what I mean? And I was raised different than that, so I should have known better from the get-go.
Well, you know what they say, there's no owner's manual. So.
No, there ain't.
Yeah.
You're going to make mistakes, but you don't fail if you don't keep trying. You only fail if you don't keep trying, you know.
But the key is, once you recognize, then that's when you move forward and don't repeat the past, you know. And that's common sense. You know, don't stick your finger back in a fire after the first time it got burned. Mm-hmm. So either way, you know, one of the benefits of all these networks and the physical and the virtual networking that we do together is to put this information out there so that when our generation is done doing the Knights of the Round Table, the younger generation will step up to the table because they will see the worth in what we're doing and keep perpetuating it on and down until where everyone's all automatically out of nature just treating their kids right. And that's what's going to make this world a better place, you know. Right now, how do we get past all the hatred and contempt that's over there right now? I mean, people right now, as we speak, are shooting at each other. How do we stop that?
Right.
You know?
I was going to say, that thing about the Celestine prophecies, that's one person's point of view that wrote that book. Maybe a few people worked on it. Every time you read a new book, you're picking up somebody else's point of view. You're getting to see the world through their eyes for just a moment. So the more books you read, the better. I mean, even in books that are considered complete garbage, you're still getting a psychological understanding behind the writer, you know, behind the words from the writer. You're understanding the writer. It's kind of like going to look at art. Every time you look at another piece of art, you're looking at somebody else's world, how they saw it through their eyes. You know, and that's where the true solutions to our world are going to come from, is understanding how all these other people are you know, taking in the world and how they're affecting the world because of their view and whatnot, and how best to basically interface yourself into it to, you know, make a positive aspect to it to better the world instead of making it worse.
Well, history,
instead of, you know, don't be a square peg trying to jam yourself into a round hole, you know.
History and the elderly are, you know, if you ignore history and if you ignore the elderly, you ignore people who have already been down the road and can tell you that, you know, at road marker number whatsoever, you know, that there's a giant chuck hole, and so you might want to steer off to the left, but be cautious when doing so because it's around a curve where you could get in a head-on collision, you know. Had you not paid attention to them, it would have ended up in disaster, and they could have saved you that whole deal. There's a lot to be learned from that.
I believe the phrase is, pay attention to the guy with the white hair because he managed to make it as far as he did.
Yeah, there you go.
There's some advice.
You know,
but even some white-haired men can be a little bit crazy sometimes and have absolutely nothing good to input. I'm just saying.
Paying attention to someone, paying attention to what someone says, though, is a lot different than actually doing what they say. You still should always examine all knowledge. examine all knowledge to see its value, you know.
Yeah, before you use critical thinking, you know. Right. Never just blindly accept what you're being told, as we've spoken about a million times on here. Always do your own research and delve a little bit deeper than what you've been told, and be discerning with the information you've given.
Right. Well, and you know, that's the thing, is you pointed the whole solution in a nutshell is blindly. Don't blindly accept and don't blindly ignore. Don't make yourself blind. Open those eyes and look, you know.
Yeah, the road to disaster was road to good intentions was paved by disaster. That's because
what's going on behind me.
Somebody didn't pay attention, you know. The last time we made this street out of mush, car sunk. So maybe we should not make it out of mush this time.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't use the snow plow in Indiana to press over the roads after we fill in them potholes.
Yeah.
Just saying, Indiana, maybe not a good idea, huh?
Salt is bad for roads too, because they make the roads out of garbage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean that quite literally. Mm. The road is made out of little chips. After they get done breaking down stones to get a solid block to build something out of, they take the little chips.
Yeah, and then you got to worry
about. They mix it with the gunk that came from the oil that they can't use for anything else, and bring it out and just smear it around.
And then you got to worry about the gremlins of planned obsolescence, where they may not want that street to last very long, so they can have job security. Oh, hey, while I'm building this road, I'm going to throw some of this in there, and it'll be crap within a year, and I'll be back here fixing it.
Yep.
Well, the point is, though, our roads, blacktop roads, are essentially the equivalent, road-wise, as pot metal is to metal. Pot metal is basically all the junk, all the sludge, all the slag that is not useful. They take it off the top because it's impure, thrown into a pot, and rather than repurifying it to get the good stuff out of it, they just go ahead and use the whole mix, the whole mash, to get more products out of it.
Well,
instead of cleaning it up, so the products are quality, they end up coming out easily broken. They chip and fall apart. There's no flexibility to them at all. You know, oftentimes either too heavy or too light.
Think about if they used common sense from the get-go as they built their roads, and they built their roads out of materials that weren't absorbing heat and they would last a lot longer, or, you know, whenever water gets down in the cracks and freezes during the winter and splits or whatever, and they figured out solutions by which to make a road that would, be thermally protected and cold protected, whatever, you know, and the length, you wouldn't have to waste as much time and resources to maintain that road if you made it right the first time. You know, it's like the difference between a 1957 Chevy Nomad as opposed to a 2014, car. One's made out of basically a pop can with some plastic attached to it, and maybe a little bit of a styrofoam and doggone, you know, cheap old materials. Whereas opposed to that 57 Chevy, still as sturdy as it was the day you built it, you know? They really built things back in the day to last, you know?
Right. Well, I would say cultists will probably like this aspect, too. Those cars that were made back then could take a beating, so therefore, basically, you ended up with dumb people who made really bad mistakes and weren't paying attention or doing whatever it is they were doing.
Surviving.
Dead. No, they weren't surviving. They were dying inside their car by being beat around inside the car when the car comes to a stop and there's just a little ding on the car. The car can be driven off.
Yeah, the car
now
was fine.
The car's collapsed to absorb the impact, and the car is destroyed, and the person lives to go destroy another car a day.
So,
you know?
While you're building this...
depending on the impact, but yeah.
While you're building this...
Point.
Right.
Why you're building
they idiot-proof things. That's why the cars fall apart so easily, for the most part, is to idiot-proof it for the people who want to text on their phone while they should be paying attention to what the guy in front of them is doing, what the guy behind them is doing.
But we have
that person on the corner is doing.
We have the technology to build cars right now, today, that would not only protect the passenger, but would protect the car. We also have the capabilities of building houses in areas that are prone to tornadoes that will not blow down, that are prone to floods, will not sink, you know. We have the knowledge. The knowledge is there. I mean, it's not that we can't do it. It's that society hasn't come to the point where the necessity has proposed itself to such an extreme that you either build a house that floats or you sink, period. You know, go down by the river. Mm-hmm. There's literally houses. They call them pole houses down there. And the whole entire house is sitting on a float system that when the water raises from the river, the house and the garage and the car and everything, they rise up. And then they have to wait the water out or take a boat, which is strapped to the garage, that they can get over to dry land and go to work, you know. So those folks figured it out. I mean, look at the people in is it in Italy that I'm thinking about where the streets are literally water? You know what I'm talking about, Venice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
These folks have been living in water forever. I mean, these communities have built.
We've got a capital city here in Australia called Brisbane, and you probably all heard about the Brisbane floods that happened a year or so ago. It's built on a riverbed. Like, are you serious?
Yeah, if you're going to do it.
You build on a riverbed, and when it floods, you stand up and complain, and you whinge, and you cry at your insurance company, and all the rest of it, but you built on a riverbed.
Why is New Mexico?
Was that Ellie?
Aren't they supposed to be on poles?
Well, they do have them risen up, but, you know, once the water level gets high enough in the Brisbane River, it's all over by the shouting.
Right, I was going to say, Playas, New Mexico, Playas is a basin. It literally is a dried up lake.
Mm.
So they ever get a serious rain out there, even though it's in the desert, it does happen.
Hey, where are they? It's an ocean.
Right. And they're gonna be all underwater, everything that they built out there.
But hey, Ellie, when we were out the other day, what did I hand you?
Oh yeah, a shell.
A seashell.
Yeah, there's the key, man. You know, yeah,
this used to be an ocean, you know, so When the world resets itself back, you know, to where it was a few million years ago, which, you know, I mean, we watch the cycles of weather and everything, and I've explained this before, that, you know, in my lifetime, I've literally watched, you know, pandemic weather move from the top of Australia right down the east coast, you know, these tornadoes and giant hailstones and everything. They all started up in Queensland, you know, and then a few years went by of my life, and it started happening up in New South Wales, which is a state down. And then, about another 10 years later, it was happening up the top end of Melbourne in Victoria, another state down. You know, the weather patterns are moving, the cycles are moving, everything's readjusting itself. If this place decides it wants to be an ocean again, bye-bye BHP and your little mine. There's going to be nothing out here but water.
Well, and there you go. See, common sense would dictate that if you're going to build a house, you know, that, you know, go for the three little pigs. You know, the one pig built his house out of bricks, the next one built it out of sticks, and then the other one built it out of straw or whatever, you know.
Well, one building out of sticks was smart if he was in Brisbane. At least he had half a chance of floating it.
Yeah. It's all strapped together. I mean, he could bob around there. But either way, if you're going to build a house out of bricks, make sure you build it on a high enough level to where, you know, you're not going to have to worry about flooding, you know. Why didn't you just, from the get-go, take all those materials and build a house that would float, that would the tornado couldn't tear around or whatever, you know. A houseboat that was earthquake-proof, that was sink-proof, you know, you can actually build a boat that will not sink, period, you know. All you got to do is have the mass bigger than the, you could fill the entire house full of water and it would still float, you know. It is possible.
Positive buoyancy.
Yeah.
Mm.
But, you know, here we are.
Depending on building materials, build your house the same way that a polar bear is built.
Society will... Society will take and cut down a trillion trees to build a bunch of stick houses in a general flood zone that eventually one day will become slums and then at some time will actually become abandoned. So why not, instead of chopping down all those trees to build stick houses, use the technology available to hear us in the fancy world of 2014 and build houses that won't rot, won't sink. You know, everything eventually is going to be biodegradable, but regardless, you could still build a house that would last for hundreds of years, maybe even thousands of years, as opposed to, you know, maybe 20, 30 years. The next thing you know, your house isn't worth a penny. You know, it ain't worth what you put into it. What do they call that, upside down?
There are all kinds of ways to do what you need to do, too. I mean, if you soak down the wood with cedar oil, and that you can get from the pine needles that fall off the cedar trees, and jalapeno juice, you can make sure that insects will not interfere with it. You can make sure there are no fungus grows on it. I mean, if that's all you got to work with is wood in your area, you're going to find something out there that will basically keep those things away. So just do your research. I mean, you know, the whole thing with marigolds, keeping mosquitoes away and stuff like that, and the other insects that eat your plants. Well, try using that same information to, you know, if you got tons of marigolds and you don't have the cedar to protect the wood that you're going to use, you know.
Well, somehow
eventually
or another,
we'll get to the point where we can build everything out of plastic, because we can turn any plant matter into plastic.
Somehow or another, nature turned... Somehow or another, nature turned trees into stone, man. Petrified wood. So pay attention
to
nature. If you live in a flood zone, make sure, if you're going to live there, build your house like a boat, you know, and build it so it's a non-sinkable boat. What that boy?
Let's be honest. I mean, that really doesn't sound like rocket science, does it? Now, come on. If you live where it's going to flood, build a house that floats. I don't know. Just. Mind blown. Wow.
I never thought
of that. It's not going to go anywhere. It can be underwater, made all out of plastic with plastic things inside, so that you can come back, just take the hose and wash it all out, wash the mud back out, and then go back to living in it. And
Really, you know, it's just a case of thinking it through, isn't it? You know, not just whacking it up willy-nilly.
That's exactly it, thinking it through. Don't just throw things together and expect it to, you know, to work just because, you know, you want it to.
And in all of what I just said, I mean no disrespect to the residents of Brisbane, because a lot of people did lose their houses and did lose all of their stuff. But at the same time, you know, you chose to build there. You could have mitigated your situation to come out a little bit better than you did, you know?
Well, you know...
I was going to say, don't sugarcoat the fact that you're ripping off the warning label.
And that little tag on the mattress that says, under the penalty of law, don't tear it off.
I refuse to idiot-proof the world, and I make no secret of that whatsoever, so...
Well, you don't have to idiot-proof the world, but you can idiot-proof your own house. That way you don't have to be a burden on society if you want to...
What are you trying to say about me?
I'm just saying, you know, if you're living over...
Just call me an idiot.
If you're living over a flood zone, or if you're living in the desert, figure out a way to adapt to your environment. In the desert, you need to be warm at night, and you need to be cool in the summertime.
Indeed.
So build your house using things that nature already does. I mean, the lizard knows that he can run up underneath a shade tree, you know, and you know that. And so, you know, plant a whole lot of shade trees around your house. It'll keep your house cooler in the daytime, you know, and then all you got to worry about is heating it up at night.
Yep. Lots and lots of permaculture around your house.
Yeah.
Try and put some greenery and some moisture around your house, and then as that breeze blows through, it might actually do you some good.
And if you live near a uranium mine, then don't ask the government for permission. Figure out a way to stick probes down in the dirt and capture some of that expended energy as that uranium's depleting.
Well, better yet, move away from it so it's not destroying your DNA.
Hey, man, you leave my DNA alone, all right?
Look, this comes back to cultists. This comes back to cultists asking me. He said, you think I should be worried because I live next to a uranium mine? I'm asking him, how long have you been living there? And he said, 30-some-odd years or something like that?
No, I haven't been here that long.
All right, however...
Don't.
But, you know, I asked him, how do you feel? And he said, I feel great. And I said, well, you know, then you've been there all that long and you're still doing okay. I would say that it's probably safe to drink the water, you know?
It's the water that worries me out here, because the water comes from the Artesian Basin. It's full of salt, and to counteract the salt, they pack it full of chlorine. And so you've just got this great big toxic cup of water sitting in front of you, and I tell you what, not only can you smell it, but it instantaneously, like within a minute of drinking it, it sits heavy in your stomach and it makes you feel like crap.
Well, get you...
The one thing you do know, there's no fluoride in the water.
That's good. Of course, there's no fluoride in the water.
Well, then you get you a pressure cooker.
My dad knows this.
Get you a pressure cooker and make you a water distiller and distill your water, you know, and filter that distilled water down through some natural filtration system.
Just use the sun to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's what I used to do. I used to get one of them big water cooler type jugs and water and leave it out in the sun under Muddy's advice. Leave it out in the sun for a few hours before I drink it. But even then, you can still taste it. So I actually buy cask water, and it comes with that. It literally has because in Australia, when you buy a product, it has to have every single thing that's in that product written on the label when it comes to food and drink. So this is literally a box of H2O.
Well, you got it better than we got it, man. Because
yeah,
they don't have to label anything over here.
I was trying to find decent water over there, and I knew straight away that I couldn't discern properly by the label because you weren't given the correct information. You were given half of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got
that straight away, so I didn't even bother.
They got water. Yeah. Water came out of this Sweet Springs or something like that, and they don't want to tell you that in the factory they had it actually coming out of the tap, you know, and they're charging you $1 a bottle for it.
That's Nestle for you.
Yeah.
Who believes that water is not a human right?
Right.
They're nuts.
Yeah, I actually wrote
according to them. They're actively doing what they can to basically destroy the drinking water they can't buy the rights to.
Yeah, I wrote a very, very long nasty post to the CEO of Nestle and I wondered if I'd get a response, but under a rock.
Ignored it like everybody else's.
Yeah.
Because you're beneath him, dude. He's basically dismissed. So there's no talking.
I'm beneath him?
Yeah,
I don't think so. No, he is like the muck on my shoe when I step in the dog's feces, my friend.
You're twisting what I said instead of understanding what I'm saying.
No, I understood what you said. I'm just not accepting it.
You know full well in his time to beneath him. With him saying what he said, so writing to him is just wasting your breath.
Well, I know exactly what you're saying. I just choose to not believe that is how the world works. Because in my reality, he is beneath me, not I beneath him.
No. That's my reality. This isn't about a reality. This is about his way of thinking.
I know. That's what I'm saying. This is my reality, not
his. He's not saying that he is above you or below you.
I know what you're saying.
Therefore, nothing.
You're missing my poetic use of words, Thomas.
I don't want to let everybody else get confused by poetic use of words. Let's be frank and honest, you know.
I don't want to be frank. I want to be Shazist.
It wasn't really that poetically technical, but anyway, it doesn't matter.
Don't waste your time trying to change these people that can't be changed. You change the world around you, like Shazist has been saying.
Exactly. My reality, not his.
Start making your own clean drinking water.
In his reality, to explain it, in his reality, I am beneath him. I choose not to believe his reality because in my reality, he is beneath me.
And that's the first thing you do is start making sure you can provide all your own stuff so that you can dismiss him.
Yeah
well, it's illegal to catch your own.
And in my reality, we're all on the same level. And we all have this knowledge in our heads. And so we could come together, we could actually build a community that would have, you know, all the fresh water we needed and all the electricity and everything. And it's all stuff that the entire world could actually do had they all, you know, sat back and looked at the big picture and then actually got in there and done something. But, you know, people that run around protesting chlorine and fluoride on the other side of the world, and I'm saying if that system ain't willing to change, you know, tell everybody on the other side, look, we're going to go over and we're going to get a natural well over here on this property here that we're allowed to do so because their regulations are different than over here. And if you want fresh water that doesn't have chlorine, come over here, or fluoride, come over here and tap from this well over here. And maneuver people towards beneficial things such as, you know, food that isn't polluted with, you know, all kinds of poisons and stuff like that, you know. Work on building solutions on this side that people have actual access to. They go over to this well, they know it's not tampered with, and work it that way. Because the way the system is right now, everybody over there pissing and moaning and protesting and doing that, they're not getting nothing accomplished. All they're doing is making more regulations, making it harder for the average Joe to dig a well. You can't dig a well over there because you're going to drain my water over here, you know, so on and so forth. The world is three-quarters covered in water. And everybody says, well, most of it's salt water. You can't do nothing. You go over there to Dubai and you tell them people over there to Dubai that they can't drink seawater. They not only drink seawater, they pump the seawater from the sea and they're actually building their own island. And they pump the water from the sea all the way up through high rises, and then it falls back down to the from the high rise, and they use it to cool the building down. Plus, they use it to flush the waste down the drain, and they use it to drink. So there is innovation over there with multi-billionaires and trillionaires that live over there in Dubai. Go do some research on that. It's just amazing what these guys have actually accomplished. Now, if these guys can do that in essentially what was a wasteland and not even an island at the time, they built the whole entire thing, and if they can do all that, you tell me that society as a whole couldn't figure out a way that everybody on this planet could have fresh water and food and everything they needed? I mean, ugh. Common sense, man. If I had a big mechanical hand that could reach across the globe and slap stupid people simultaneously...
There's going to be a lot of red cheeks.
You know how many times I'd push that button?
Just like spamming it.
Yeah. I mean, come
on,
man.
Well, that's the thing, too. People think that things take money. Money is not what it takes. Money is just a representation of effort and work. If you're willing to create the effort and work without the money, you still get the same results.
Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. It's going to take knowledge. Which means you're going to have to actually get off the couch and use your brain to do some research, read a book, or two, or three, or four, or as many as you can get your hands on. Absorb that knowledge.
Read everything you can, man.
And put that knowledge out to your friends and benefit them. If you see your friend slamming his thumb with a hammer every time he hits a nail, tell him, look, brother, I watched this YouTube video that if you choke up on the hammer back, you know, a little bit, then you can get a better swing on it. You won't be smashing your thumb all the time. You'll save your neighbor's thumb just by teaching them how to properly use a hammer. Now, that sounds kind of stupid. Oh, the guy shouldn't have a hammer in his hand if he doesn't know how to swing it. But look how many people out there swinging hammers right now, tearing stuff up. They don't know what they're doing. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, when you see a problem, help remedy it by teaching them in a respectful manner how to do it better.
See, that goes back to not being lazy, because if you're being lazy, then you're not going to want to basically do the work to teach that person. You're going to want to just laugh at them and walk away.
Yeah. I bet that hurt.
Or be irritated by it and walk away. But, you know, either way, it's laziness versus actually virtue and you know, investing something into the world to make it more what you want. I mean, you're molding every time you go out and put some effort into the world.
Uh-oh, we lost the call there. Doggone it. Hate it when that happens. Well, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Hopefully we'll get that call back there. But either way, folks, you know, common sense needs to dictate the world. You know, we don't... I hate it when that happens. We don't need some sort of one-world government. We need some sort of one-world idea where people use common sense. And if you live in a flood zone, if you're gonna stay there, at least build your house to be able to withstand what nature's gonna throw at you. Because you know, eventually in a flood zone, your house is gonna get flooded. If you live somewhere where it's cold, you know, build your house with better insulation. I know that sounds easy to say. I think what I'm gonna do is go to a quick music break here. and see if I can get this call back, because this is driving me insane. Stay tuned. You're listening to Knights of the Round. That's right, you're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We had a little bit of technical difficulty there with Skype, but I think we got everybody back again. And this is King Shaziz the Terrible. I rule with an iron fist. Don't you forget it. What? So, where were we before we got so rudely interrupted by those who hate common sense?
See, this is the whole point. That's what happens when we get cut off, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thomas was the last one talking, so we'll put him on the spot.
Yeah, it was Thomas's fault.
I don't remember where I was at.
See, and that's what happened. Bam.
Well,
it all falls apart.
While Starmind is wandering...
Whatever they were doing to interrupt us, they succeeded at this point. So let's get it going.
Congrats.
Well,
I'm going to go back with this guy that's saying that, you know, changing people's minds is the key to real change. I don't think that's true. I think educating people so that they can use their mind, that's the real key to change. Because a lot of people are not given those keys so that they can unlock the world themselves. You know, they have people unlocking the world for them and choosing what doors to let them through.
Close to being one and the same. You educate someone, you give them the ability to change their mind.
Right.
Yeah. Teach a man how to fish and you'll feed him for life. Yay. Come on. Anybody?
So I was gonna say, what is that? Build a fire for a man; he'll be warm for night. Set a man on fire, and he'll be warm for the rest of his life.
Man, that's
isn't that what they're saying?
hey, man! If we're on a deserted island, I'm staying on the opposite side of Thomas, because
stay away from Larry too, because you already heard what he said about Marianne.
Yeah,
don't go near Don't go look into the volcano to see if it's active with him.
Yeah, there you go. He's like, look closer. Ooh. Ah!
Yeah.
Man. Hey, can somebody add Barry Prince to the call?
I believe I might have the ability to do that.
Okay, try that.
maybe. Yes, I do.
Okay, cool.
Bam.
All right, great. Anyway, we're getting down to the wire, man. It's been a really fascinating show, and hopefully somebody takes to heart the common sense that we're talking about, you know? Go out there and feed the world. I mean, don't ask for permission. Just do it. Do we got Barry yet?
Yeah.
How you doing there, Barry?
Greg, sorry, I missed most of the show. I got to listen to it a little bit earlier, and then my dog made me go for a run. So.
Well, you caught us right down. You caught us right down to the wire, brother. What's on your mind?
I'm going to share something really quick, gentlemen. This morning, I was talking to a couple guys in my community, and the knowledge of free energy is getting out there because they brought the conversation up with me, and of course, I just jumped all over it. And we had an incredible conversation this morning. So to say that the word is not getting out there would be a lie.
Well, brother,
my own community here, people that are taking interest in free energy, you wouldn't believe the conversation we had, guys, and I don't have time to tell you about it, but that really impacted me this morning, gentlemen. So all I can say is kudos, let's hit it hard and keep up the good work.
Well, you
thanks
did
for letting us know that, Barry. That's awesome, man.
It is. You did invite them to the table, right?
You blew me away, guys. It blew me away, and these guys are electricians.
You did it. You did invite them to the table, right?
I told them next Sunday. I said, guys, would you please join the conversation next Sunday, because with your knowledge of electricity and your background, and both of them are journeymen, you will grab the concepts of what we're talking about here far, far faster than a common man like myself.
Yeah.
And they said they'd both join next Sunday. The conversation we had this morning, guys, blew me away. It was meant for me to go out and go for a run with my dogs, because I ran into these two guys, and the conversation just flowed. So it was great. Thanks.
All right.
Awesome. Chuck them my Skype details during the week, mate, and we'll get
hooked
up to it.
Cool conversation, guys. That's all I can say.
See, that's what it's all about, folks. That is what it's all about,
man.
That's
encouraging. I like to hear news like that. That's good.
Well,
you know what they're saying? One other comment. They're telling all their friends about this now. These guys are well-respected individuals in our community that have established businesses and are well-respected and well-known. And they're about this now to their friends. They're going, hey, you know what? There's something out there, and they're not telling us about it.
Yeah.
And the conversation almost brought tears to my eyes this morning, guys. So there you go. What a great morning it started up to be.
See that, folks? That's the power of what we're doing right here. We need to keep this ball rolling. And, you know, with that said, we're right down to the wire there. So this is the time where we go around the table. And since Barry just showed up, we'll give him the first word. If that's all right, Cultus, you can take everybody else around the table if you want.
We'll tell you, guys, that really brought an emotion to my heart this morning, Beth. The world is starting to understand that we are being duped left, right, and center, and the future of our children is being taken away from us and right in front of our eyes, and we have the power in our hands to change this. And all it is knowledge, sharing this knowledge every time you get a chance. Every time I get a chance to talk about free energy, times I get Larry exposed to other people in the field that are doing this, I get a chance to expose them to other individuals. I jump on that. This seems to be my main focus of my attention right now. And this morning, I saw incredible results in our community, people I haven't even talked to that are aware of it. So kudos to it all. That's all I can say, guys. Thanks for letting me share a few thoughts with you today.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks a lot, mate. Thomas.
What is this, a closing statement?
Closing statement, brother. Yep. You got your 30 seconds of last fight.
Yeah, I was going to say, go back to that reading thing. Learn everything you can and network with people, man. Look and find people of like mind. If you find people that aren't of like mind, and, you know, they're not receptive to learn and you know, interested in finding out about the world, you got to cut the cord. Move on and keep looking for people that are, you know, you're going to be able to work with, you know. You want team players, like you said before, no I in team, you know.
Exactly.
And if you run across somebody that's all I, then maybe you got to move on. Maybe one day you can come back and they'll, you know, after a few knocks and dings, you know, from making mistakes, doing what they're doing, they'll finally realize, hey, maybe I'm not doing things right and join you. But, you know, in the meantime, don't waste your time on them when you could be spending that time with much more valuable people that are, you know, ready to go right now, you know.
And how, brother?
Well said, mate. Well said. And so, Larry.
Yes, sir. Once again, you inventors out there, keep up the good work. Don't lose the faith. You're going to be seen. You're going to make a big difference to everybody in the world, and share it with the children.
Amen, brother.
Hey, for sure. Good work, mate. Wonderful. Mitko.
Yeah. just say something about all the awakening and stuff. You guys think that we're going, we're the startup of the things, but I really believe we're going to accomplish something very important in the next maybe 1 or 2 years, yeah. Not in a few generations.
Yeah, for sure. The amount of people waking up now, and like, you know, Barry's just brought to our attention a couple more people who are, you know, well-educated electricians and you know, are established businesses and all the rest of it. And these are the people who generally live in the closed box environment, who generally would turn around and say, no, that's not going to work, are starting to wake up and come to the table. So
we're changing things right now.
You're dead right, Mikko. Yeah, we are, and we've always said we are. You know, we are the beginning of something very big here, and we will get it done for sure.
Good words.
Dame Ellie, would you like to have some parting words?
Well, I would just like to say, feel blessed for those that love you and accept you for your mistakes, and just keep them close to you and just be a good friend to them.
Yep, good.
Amen.
And Hal.
And Sir Tom Sharp, if you are still with us. If your midgets aren't running around making too much noise.
Yeah, we hadn't heard much from him.
Going twice.
Well, he's got some good words to say. He's just preoccupied.
Okay, so, down to me. As always, you know, you'll take care out there, be good, and if you can't be good at it. And, you know, keep up, as Larry was pointing out, keep up the good work. Work, you know, keep doing the research, keep plugging along, because the awakening is happening. You know, we are starting to come together in mass, and we are going to get something absolutely phenomenal out there. And yeah, just the mind boggles as to what direction we are going to go, but it is quite apparent that something fantastic is going to come of this very soon. So, you know, with all that said, during the week, you know, pop over to the website. You've got shazizradio.com, you've got cultus.weebly.com, and get yourself involved in cryptocurrency. Go over to banksy.co.uk and check that out. Download the wallet and just set it off to mine and get yourself some free coins out of just your computer processing power that you would normally have running around anyway. So, with all that said, you'll be good. Love you all. Take care, everybody.
All right, good deal. That was an awesome show, Honorable Knights of the Round Table. Thank you very much for all your input to everything, and it's about that positive pebble, throwing the positive pebble in the pond, and we are definitely making a difference. And so, you know, with that said, you know, if you like what you hear here on Shaziz Radio and all these other networks, bring your friends over there. You know, it does make a difference. And, you know, we've got an opportunity here. It's honorable and a humbling experience to be with people of like minds around the world who see that there is hope and a light at the end of the tunnel, as opposed to the system that is the beast that's eating us all alive. We can make a difference, and we can make the world a better place. And it starts with things like the Knights of the Round Table. And so, with that said, peace and love, everybody. Take care, and thank you for listening in.
Woman, man!
Sorry, what knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37, I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here! Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
Oh, didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you. We're an anarcho-syndicalist commune.
We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet!
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet! I order you to be quiet!
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system. Help, help, I'm being repressed.
Bloody peasant.
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot.
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 It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're Knights of the Round Table. We dance whenever we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're Knights of the Round Table. Our shows are more mid-able. So many times we give and rhyme that our quiet on sing able. We're off to mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram a lot.
No, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Shazam the Turbo! Always looking Shazam the Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table!